Chicago blues musician Yoko Noge. Week in Review with Amara Enya and Mario Smith. And a surprise episode of Character Flaws. And now, here's your host, a man who can't tell if he's sweating or still wet from the rain, Justin Kaufman.
That pretty much sums up tonight, doesn't it? Chicago? Like, it really does. Like, is it hot? Am I sweating? Or am I just wet from the rain? Welcome to The Download, everybody. It's Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock here on 720 WGN Radio. We got a great show for you lined up tonight. Wow, some Olympic news. I'm not even sure if you can say it. The U.S. basketball team looks to have escaped a narrow victory. They did get a victory over Serbia, but it was the kind of thing, and I'm not sure if it's at the end. I think it's at the end of the game, but it was like a 3-point lead. You know, with Serbia has the ball down the stretch. And I think somehow the U.S. held on to the lead. There you go. Whew. That's tough, you know, for all the people listening out there. You think that every time the USA basketball team takes the floor, they're going to win by 30, 40 points. But in this case, this was more like an NBA-type game where they actually was close. So there you have it. That's our Olympic update for the night. We had planned a whole show to really evaluate and explore how the U.S. basketball team lost today, but they won. So now what? That's a real bummer. You know what else is a bummer, Pete? The fact that we have the lights on bright like it's December.
Yeah.
Right now it is very, very dark outside because of the rain here on Chicago's Michigan Avenue, the Mag Mile. And it just has that vibe. Like when I sat down, Brian left, and I got everything situated, I was like, I know this feeling. I have a feeling like the Blackhawks are on next.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that feeling right here. That's never something that you really want to experience outside of the actual experience, which should be happening in December, January, February.
I've noticed this last week, the last couple of weeks, it's dark now by 8. You know, it was almost light for till 9 o'clock while we're doing the show. Like half the show was light, and now it's like it's creeping earlier and earlier. Right. And
so, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? That's how it feels.
It does. It does. Totally does.
It totally feels that way. So, holiday plans, Pete? Well,
unless you step outside, of course, because it's like 175 degrees
exactly.
out.
Exactly. It really does have that feel, and it's fun to watch the people on Michigan Avenue right now without the. Without the umbrellas because they're in position where they're dressed, you know, to impress. It's Friday night, summer Friday night. A lot of tank tops, flowy clothes,
yep.
Linens. And if they don't have an umbrella, they're hurting right now.
Remember a while back you said you're anti-umbrella, you don't use
it? Yeah, I'm not an umbrella guy. I feel like that, I understand I was kind of pushed off my point a little bit, but my whole point is, you know, you live and die with the weather. You go with it. That's Chicago. I'm not a kind of guy who's going to check the weather. I never check the weather report. I am. I need to be lean. I need to be able to move fast. You know, like my people, we are nomadic.
Uh-huh.
You know, we need to get one place to another. I'm. You know, of the ancestors of like the swamp fox in the south. You know, you can't stay. British will find you. You got to move. You know? So I feel like the umbrella slows me down. Now, looking at the people who are outside, I mean, they've got the umbrella on, and they're right. They're dry. Right? But in my case, I think what it does, really, is it keeps me focused. Like, I got to go to the gym to stay fast. So when it's raining, I can get where I have to get fast.
All right.
You know?
I feel you.
I also want to be a little different than everybody else. You know, I don't walk around with, like, dry. Who wants to be dry? You know? There's a lot. It's really surprising to me how so many people tonight are prepared for the weather. As I look outside, they've got ponchos, garbage bags, and umbrellas. I didn't even know it was going to rain today. I work off, and I'll say this a million times. You got the golf umbrellas coming up here. I always go off of what yesterday was like. That's just always my thing. I'm like, oh, like I wake up and yesterday was real nice. It's going to be nice again today. So, you know, in a weird way, it's like I'm creating spice in my life. Maybe as Jesse Ball talked about earlier in the week about, you know, walking down the street and hoping to have surprises. That's sort of the idea of a writer's life, that you want to be somewhere and you want to be surprised. Maybe that's what I'm doing. So, like, when I walk out, I'm like, oh, man, I just got shocked to the system. It's raining. Oh, it's so cold. It's terrible in the winter. There's no doubt about it when you walk out and it's the frost on you. You're like, oh, I should probably be wearing a jacket.
But at least you know in the winter, you know it's going to be cold every day from November to March.
Right. I'm not the kind of guy who has the fashion sense or the common sense to switch jackets. When I go winter jacket, it's winter jacket till daylight savings.
Yeah, I do my jeans.
Right.
Exactly. You know, wear the jeans all the time.
You're not switching it up. You're not the person who's looking, it's 52. I might go cargo short. Okay, let's see.
The golf umbrellas are irritating, taking up half the sidewalk.
I just saw one go by.
I waited.
Looked like a clown.
Yeah, exactly.
It really did. I'm like, oh, the clown. The Wisconsin clown is walking down Michigan Avenue. Oh, nope. It's just a guy with a golf umbrella.
And then the poncho. You know, have some dignity. You can't be an adult walking around with a poncho.
A garbage bag, maybe, if you're trying to be somewhat, you know, piecemeal, or you're trying to be spunky and come up with something, right? But I feel like if you have a poncho on you, that you went too far.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Maybe agreed. If you're at a restaurant or something, like, hey, we got free ponchos. Have this rosebud poncho.
All right.
Maybe you're like, okay, I'll take that. Thank you. But yeah, if you are the kind of person who has a poncho in their purse or in their satchel or their, what do you call that thing you wear around when you're a tourist?
Your fanny pack?
Fanny pack, mm-hmm. Or the belt, even the money belt,
mm-hmm.
You know? Hey, come on. We're not touring Italy here. Right? It's like the guy who wears Swiss Army knife on them. Oh, you never know. What's going to happen? You're going to stab somebody? That's essentially all that's worth. Like anything else, like, I don't know, I was going to unscrew this. Well, I don't know, you know, need to open a bottle of wine.
I had a Swiss Army knife keychain, mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, for, you know, if things come up, I need to, like,
right.
You know, stab somebody,
that's the oak lawn in you, right.
But it was, you know, it was miniature.
Right.
So I couldn't open any of the, like, my fingers are too big to open any of the things. I'm like, I got to get this. I couldn't do it. So I was like, yeah, you know what I mean? They're like, it was like tiny.
That's so funny. I'm so prepared. I'm so ready to go. How do I get this tiny little corkscrew out? We got a great show tonight here on The Download. Yoko Noge is going to be here, a great jazz blues musician here in Chicago, pianist. She is bringing her keyboard and she's going to play some music for us tonight. That's exciting. It really is a great story. She came here in 1984, fell in love with Chicago, fell in love with the music, and began a career as a jazz and blues musician. She came from Osaka, Japan. So she's a Japanese jazz blues musician. You know, and there's a real connection. I want to talk to her about the Asian-American connection or Asian jazz connection to Chicago. We had Tatsu Aoki in one time last year. It's a great interview with him about just that connection. What brings people from all over the world to Chicago to play jazz and blues. And it's a language, you know, there's no language barrier because the music speaks for itself. So we'll talk with Yoko Noge coming up. She's got a show tomorrow at a festival in the Ginza Fest in Old Town. So we'll talk with her. Also tonight, the Olympics, of course. Big night for the Olympics. I'm seeing, and the reason I say it's a big night is we, I think, have made a successful transition from swimming to track. I am seeing people run, and they are running their hearts out. So maybe we're making that transition as a society together. Yeah, viewers are making their transition to track and field. So Molly Green, who's been fan jamming the Olympics all week long, is going to join us to wrap up this primetime event. She'll do that in the 9 o'clock hour. Little programming note for everybody. No frying pan tonight. I know. Steve Gadlin getting some much due time off. This is vacation time. He's got family. He doesn't need to be coming up with an invention every single moment of his life to try out here on the Download. So we'll give him a week off. He'll be back next week. And he should be. And that's good because, you know, there could be an argument that us pushing him so hard where we continually have him on every week may mean that that might be why his ideas don't necessarily hit every time. So if he has a little bit of time off to ruminate, to possibly think about workshopping his ideas, to coming up with his solutions to problems that he hasn't thought about, that's a good thing for the frying pan. So it'll be back next Friday. In its place tonight, Character Flaw, Sandy Marshall, who is a regular here on the program in Chicago. He will be here tonight, and we'll bring you the 1% report. Also, Javi Javavola will be back, yep, from the Chicago Blackhawks. He covers the Blackhawks for the Download. You know, we can't get Eddie Olczyk or any of the main guys. We have a side guy who used to play for the Hawks back in, you know, the early 90s, actually mid-90s, not so good teams. Did a lot in minor leagues. Anyway, well, Javi will be on as well. And much more tonight. It'll be a fun night. Also, we'll talk about the Bears, and also we can review Amara Enya and Mario Smith are in the building, so we will talk with them about the week that was. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Susan Berkus. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. So let's get the show on the road. We got a great one tonight. I'm excited about it. But first, let's do the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump is optimistically looking at Election Day. He told the press that if he loses in November, he's going to take a very long vacation. Glad to see the stakes are so high, Mr. Trump. He went on to say that he's afraid the election is going to be rigged. In a related story, he's thinking about going to the Bahamas, but he's worried the corner suite won't be available because the online reservation system is rigged. You can keep going with these. He also backed off his claim that President Obama was the quote-unquote founder of ISIS. He said he was being sarcastic and then went on to say, what I meant is that he was the board secretary, not president, not founder. Come on. A lot of opportunity in ISIS. The DEA rejected the attempt to loosen restrictions on marijuana. That led Hillary Clinton to say that if she were elected president, she'd push for it. And then as president, she'd also make Sundays officially a drum circle day. And Cheech and Chong, they'd get cabinet positions. You know, because that's where the snacks are. Brendan Dassey, the star, if you will, of the Netflix series Making a Murderer, is going to get out of jail. A judge overturned the conviction. Fans of the show rejoiced, and non-fans, well, spoiler alert, Brendan went to jail, and now he's not. In a related story, the same judge overturned the season finale of Lost. Yeah, said it was a real letdown. Michael Phelps won a record 22nd Olympic medal. That hasn't been done for 2,160 years. He surpassed the greatest athlete of ancient Greece, Leonidas of Rhodes. When asked for comment, Leonidas refused, but went to Twitter commenting in hieroglyphics emojis. Guy holding flag, pyramid, toga, bird, and eggplant. So, not sure what that meant. In other Olympic news, here's the Download's pool boy with the latest report on the diving pool in Rio, which has had a mysterious change of color.
Thanks, Justin. It's still green and it still smells like farts.
There we go. The Download's pool boy. Did you see the Star Wars Rogue One trailer last night? Fans were amazed by seeing a 2-second shot of the back of Darth Vader's head. Good to know that NBC, Ryan Seacrest, Disney, and the Rio Olympics spent millions on that cross promotion, but couldn't fix the green diving pool. Or how about making Darth Vader come up with a Zika pesticide? Or maybe he's already got Zika. You know what? We don't talk enough about fashion on the carryout. I really love it. And today there was a lot on display on Michigan Avenue. So now here is Sandy Marshall with the cargo shorts report.
Thanks, Justin. Sandy Marshall with the cargo shorts report here on the Download. Today I saw 7 guys with cargo shorts out in Chicago, 2 with drawstrings and 1 with a built-in cloth belt. I can confirm 6 American Eagle brand and 1 Eddie Bauer. Back to you.
There you go. That's Sandy with the cargo shorts fashion report. In weather, well, it rained. It's going to rain again tonight. And it's a hot rain. In sports, the Cubs won their 11th straight with a blowout at Wrigley. They dropped the Cards like a deck of cards, 13-2. They have taken the first 2 of this series, and they've shown no signs of slowing down. Matt Caesar hit 2 home runs today. I mean, come on. This is out of control. The White Sox, well, they lost their series in Kansas City. What else is new? The Bears looked downright awful to start the preseason last night. Blanked 22-0 by the Denver Broncos. The offense never got going. The defense blew assignments. And the special teams, well, they gave up a blocked punt for a touchdown. At least there's nowhere to go but up, maybe. The Bears play the Patriots in New England next week.
In Olympics? Wait, can I talk about what happened today? Women's soccer? Or is NBC going to show it at 11 o'clock like it's new? No? Did they show Simone Manuel last night become the first African-American medal in swimming? Did I spoil that? I'm confused about what's been shown. Simone beat out the heavily favored Campbell sisters from Australia to take gold. Here with more on the Australian sports scene is Rory McShane. Rory, is the country disappointed?
No disappointment at all, Justin. No worries. The sisters are going to get a real hero's welcome. When they come home, set foot on that tarmac, they'll be greeted with tons of koala bears, free surfboards, and those giant rickety spiders that your friends always share on Facebook.
Great. Thank you so much, Rory McShane, with the Australian Sports Update. Okay. Anyway, I think tonight is the last night for swimming, or this weekend. Something tells me NBC is going to find a way to expand swimming all the way through the month. Seems the only thing they care about. And finally tonight, the new movie Sausage Party opens in theaters. This is the animated movie about talking food that realized that when they leave the grocery store, they are doomed to die. It's not for kids. It's rated R because of adult themes and violence. But you know what? I'm bringing my son, because he's got to learn sooner or later that we all die, some chopped in a stew and some in a blender. I mean, come on, it's circle of life. That's the carryout for August 12, 2016. Hey, you looking for an easy meal? We got a special on a Vegemite sandwich.
Real nice!
Coming up, it's the week in review, the week that was here on the download. Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We'll talk about what was the biggest story, what was the winners, the losers, and which was the biggest Trump gaffe. Those are the things we will talk about. The week in review coming up here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and since it's Friday night, we thought we would bring a new segment to you. We're going to start this fall. It's a week in review, covering the week that was here in Chicago in a fun way. I mean, we're not just going to talk about the stories that were here. We got a couple categories, like what's the most important story of the week, winners, losers, what's the best story going viral, and which story from this week will be remembered in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years. We start tonight our inaugural voyage together here on The Download with Mario Smith. Mario Smith, a regular contributor here to The Download. He's on once a month or so. He had his show on WHBK in Hyde Park. We'll talk about why that's not a thing anymore. Yeah. But he's also behind the podcast, The Clock is the Enemy. Mm-hmm. Good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm wonderful, man. It's good to be here. Always good. I'm in a different seat, so this is weird. But I love being downtown.
Well, that's because we moved you one over to let Amara Enya in to the conversation. Amara, good to see you. She's also a regular here on The Download. She's a former candidate for mayor of Chicago, and she also is a contributor to the book Chicago's Not Broke, Funding the City We Deserve. Amara, good to see you.
Good to be
back. Thanks for being here. All right, so let's get right to it. Why don't we start? We'll start with you, Amara. What's the most important story of this week?
I think the most important story for me as of today is the story of the two Simones.
Hey.
It is the Olympic story, Simone Biles and Simone Manuel, who are dominating in their fields,
right,
dominating in gymnastics, mm-hmm. and dominating in swimming. That is the hugest story. It has been such an inspirational experience for me watching it. And I kind of joke around because I am an avid swimmer. And so hearing the stereotypes about black women or black people swimming in general, and then seeing Simone Manuel, who broke the record and is really not as well shattering the stereotype, but also proving that these sports, they're not off limits. Like the lack of participation in the sport is not because of a lack of ability. It is often because of the structural or systemic barriers that have prevented, especially African Americans, from taking part in that sport.
And I don't want to offend a lot of people in Chicago, but it is a North Shore sport.
Absolutely.
You know, to be a swimmer. I mean, Northwestern University has a tremendous complex. That's where we're really going to do that, you know, get into swimming. But, yeah, and I would also say probably the best Olympic run to have watched, because, you know, every time a swimmer finishes, they look up and they get excited, and there's that confidence, because you rarely get these upsets.
Yes.
And to watch Simone kind of not really know, she's and I read that she, like, I guess when you touch
the end,
it blinks a light if you medal.
Right.
And so she saw that and she's like, I can't believe it, I medaled. And she looked up and it said first.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
It was one of the most genuine reactions to anything in the history of sports, I think. And the fact that she really was not, they didn't even feature her in any of the segments during her race. They talked about the Australian swimmer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she just knocks him out, man. That was, yeah, that was big.
The, you know, it seems like every time a story like this comes along, there will be the next day response on Twitter where some media organization messes up.
Of course.
You know, and you saw it a little bit where it was, I think the headline in the Mercury Sun in San Jose was Michael Phelps shares glory with African-American or something
right,
like that.
Where
they
didn't
even name
it was
her.
Just weird.
It was weird, but it seems like there's, you know, like this Olympics more than ever, because of the I guess maybe the issues so highlighted or, and showcased around race, you're seeing a lot of, I mean, international news kind of putting foot in mouth when it comes to figuring out how to cover these Olympics.
I had a conversation this morning with a friend of mine, and I said, you know, because she was really upset about that. And I was like, why are you so angry? She's like, because they always have to do African-American. I said, well, you have to understand that right now, white people don't really know how to talk. Hear me out. And I mean, I'm not trying to be rude. What I'm saying is there's so much going on. There are a lot of eggshells on our collective ground in America right now. White folks don't really know how to say something without it turning into something else,
right,
or going viral, if you will. So the headline should have been Simone wins.
Yeah, right.
Michael Phelps also won, but he's got 13 pounds of medals. I think he could have took a backseat willingly. He literally has 13 pounds of gold medals.
Well, I've noticed it. I mean, it's not just race. I mean, there's been a lot around sexism as well.
Oh,
it
yeah.
seems to be the second prevailing notion of the Olympics.
Yeah, it's been covered, I think, more in these Olympics than any Olympics that I've watched in previous rounds. And again, it's coming down to the comments from the commentators. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of remarks about, there's one in particular that I can recall that was referencing a woman's success was due to her husband. Now, granted, yes,
yeah,
you know, there's a partnership
swimmers, right,
and
yeah.
all of that. But would they ever have said that if it were, went, for example, if it was Michael Phelps and he had a wife, and would they have attributed his success to her? So you see a lot of those mm-hmm. comments. And I think it's part of it is learning how to talk about these issues. And so now we're kind of forced to directly engage it. And so there's some mistakes and some gaffes that are made along the way.
Yeah. And also, what was it? Dan Hicks said that Simone Biles'
adoptive parents
weren't her parents. Yeah. They immediately
it's
just shot that
you know,
that
they bring these announcers out every 4 years. They just hit the dust it off.
Yeah, yeah, a little rusty.
What do you say is the most important story of the week, Mario?
The most important story of the week is Governor Rauner signing the most ridiculous bill in the history of legislation. Learn how to talk to the police when you get pulled over by the police bill for young people who are learning how to drive. You've got to really be a special kind of sick in your head to, one, draft this legislation, and then as the governor, to read it and go, you know, this is great.
Well,
this is perfect.
I will say, and I don't know if that's how it played out, but I mean, there has been a lot of rhetoric around the idea of how people interact with the police. And because of that, some factions will say that's why we're seeing an uptick in police violence, because of the fact that there's the interaction between police and the driver has decayed.
I can see that, but there are so many instances where there was no justifiable reason for example, and I can go back even last year with Sandra Bland and the instances where individuals are running away from police. Yes, if they're running away, that common sense would say you don't shoot someone in the back, right? So you can argue that if you talk a certain way or if you act a certain way, that will prevent you from having a volatile interaction with a police officer. But there are enough incidences that have occurred that show that even when you do things by the book or do things perfectly, as in the case of Philando Castile mm-hmm. in Minnesota, that won't protect you.
That case is the one that I always will point to in this conversation, because what came out after the fact is that he was pulled over 40, 50, 60 times. I forgot
Precisely.
The number.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I think the decorum that's being laid out in a bill that the governor wants to make a law, you know, after 50 times of being pulled over for reasons that have never really been said, you know, the sort of hands on the wheel, what did I do, officer, gets a little shorter. It gets
exactly.
You get a little bit more heated. So this is much bigger issue than how you talk to police.
It would Definitely. Have been nice if the governor would have took that bill and turned around and said, let me add to it the retraining of all police in the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Or how about let's teach the police how to act when they talk to citizens, as opposed to bang, bang, bang,
putting
stop.
All, yeah, I'm putting all the onus
on the citizen. Look, when you live in a state that's really a police state, and then you're going to ask a teenager, this is how you act. That's insane.
All right, let's keep going. Winner of the week. Who do you think is the winner this week? Who do you're going to go?
I'm
going to
be
exactly
repetitive.
Go.
Yeah, look, the Simones are the winners of the week. They take it all. Simone Biles, Simone Manuel. They won literally, figuratively.
I got one.
They won the country. They won the hearts of the country along with the medals that they took home.
The winner of the week is the green water in Rio.
Oh.
What in the world? Really, for real?
There,
how do you? Here's the thing. I am so glad that the Olympics did not come to Chicago. The King Drive corridor would be gone. Washington Park would look incredibly different. All of the, you think it's raining and it's stopping people from being out? Wouldn't stop a person. It'd be people everywhere. I'm glad that didn't happen. The problem is in Rio, the favelas have been raided. They've basically displaced everybody. And then when they're gone in a week, Rio's going to be a gigantic mess.
Well, that was what my winner would be Chicago, the city of Chicago, in the sense that we are seeing how it's playing out in Rio in 2016 to flashback from whatever it was 8 years ago when this all went down. The only thing I remember is when I was first watching it with the opening ceremonies and then the first couple days and all the sweeping shots of the city of Rio and everything.
Place.
I was just like, oh, man, this would be really good for Chicago. There'd be a ton of Chicago stuff. There'd be a lot of deep dish pizza on display.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad that didn't happen.
Well, you know, It's actually kind of frightening to think about what would have happened, because even in the estimates, and I worked in City Hall at the time when the Olympic bid was front and center, and the underestimated cost of the Olympics that was put forth, I mean, severely underestimated. And there's also an article that came out earlier this week that showed sort of the Olympics past. It was these structures that are abandoned, that are overgrown in different countries that have previously hosted the Olympics, and now they're no longer used. It looks almost, there's an eerie look to them. And
Beijing,
imagine, imagine what that would have been here.
It would have been a mess. They should create a place called Olympic Land and let them have the Olympics there every 4 years.
Sounds like a Simpsons episode.
Exactly.
All right, real quick, losers then. Who, if the winners are, we just mentioned Simone and Chicago and the green pool, who are the losers?
My loser of this week and every week until this is over with is Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Come on, man. Look, you said this week, and which is, you invoked the Second Amendment to suggest that people should try to take out a presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you turn around, well, they don't get my jokes. Dude, it's time. Yeah. And why, I have to ask, and it's a serious question now, why hasn't someone said this isn't it? This can't work. You have to recuse yourself.
It feels like there have been points along the way that they want him to do that, and he's in control of his own campaign.
If I was running for president and I suggested that the president of the United States could possibly be the head of a terrorist organization, I'd get arrested.
And he didn't say possibly. He said
no. He said he was. For a fact, I know it. He is. For a fact.
Trust me.
Bigly.
He said he was being sarcastic.
Trust me, Lee.
I think what happens is once he is sort of presented with the sort of repercussions of what he says, then he goes, come on, I'm just joking.
Hey, I'm kidding.
He just
around.
Backtracks. Yeah. But that disingenuous tone has really been a hallmark of his campaign, because you had surrogates who came out and justified or attempted to justify his statements, to cast his statements in a more positive light. And I think that level of being disingenuous is what has allowed his campaign to continue as it has.
Amara, what do you got for loser of the week?
I think I would go with Trump, but he's just a loser across the board. So, I mean, I don't feel that I need to justify that. But I would say another loser in the sense that we lost out is the state of Illinois. The governor vetoed the automatic voter registration bill that came across his desk. This is a bill that had significant support,
today,
even bipartisan support, that has been pushed aggressively and exposes and allows more people to take part in the democratic process. I'm not sure why he vetoed it or what his justification is, but the state of Illinois loses because of the governor.
It's definitely being pushed by progressives in the state of Illinois, but it does have the idea that you automatically get voted. And there has always been this distinction or strange, I don't know if it's a stereotype of Republicans not wanting people to register to vote because that can help them at the polls. And so you do scratch your head a little bit on why the governor would stand in the way of this if not for his political affiliation.
Yeah.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about what was the best Trump gaffe, what was the best story going viral, and what story will be remembered in 50, 100, 150, 500 years from now. It's a download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200 if you want to play along with the week that was, the week in review. What do you think the Most important story of the week is the winner, the loser. What's the best story going viral? If you want to join the conversation, 312-981-7200. You can text us as well. In studio, Amara Enya, former candidate for mayor of Chicago and also a contributor to the book Chicago's Not Broke, Funding the City We Deserve. And Mario Smith's in studio. And I always want to say news from the service entrance, but that is over. What happened?
It's not over.
Here we go again.
No, the show isn't over. I'm actually meeting with somebody next week. You know, I love Chirp.
Yeah.
Oh, Pete's gone. I love Chirp. Chirp is the best. I'm meeting with someone next week, and hopefully,
hopefully
I'll have an announcement in a week or two. I'm looking to come back with the show in September.
You had a long run there.
15 years. Oh, yeah. Amara's been a guest several times.
Certainly
on the show.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, real quick. Unless these bed bugs that the University of Chicago purports to be there are as big as the bugs in Starship Troopers, there's no reason. They shut the radio station off for 2 weeks.
To eradicate
bed bugs.
Why the bed bugs up in the studio?
And then they wanted the DJ. Ooh, I am not going to get in trouble for this. They wanted the DJs from the radio station to pay for an exterminator to come into their homes to prove that they don't have bed bugs before you can come back into the radio station. And I just thought about it, and I waited, and it took like 10 seconds. I said, I quit. there's no way in hell I'm doing that.
Well.
And to add insult to injury, the 15 years that I spent there, they have pulled 2 incidents within 6 months to make people feel stupid. And I just can't be a part of it anymore.
Right.
So,
well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm
hey,
glad.
But
that,
you know what? If you ever need like a guest host.
Yeah, there you go.
I've got radio experience.
All right, you do.
I can do it.
Unfortunately, it's Friday. The guest host time is like right now. And I have no cloud at the station, and I am here while others are
I've got chloroform napkins in my bag.
All right, let's keep going. We've got we did the most important story, winners and losers. Let's go to this fun question. Which Trump gaffe do you think was the biggest this week? We already know there's going to be gaffes per week, you know, and it's sort of become a norm. But which do you think was the biggest?
I think the founder of ISIS comment was the biggest gaffe. I mean, it had to be the biggest gaffe. And he doubled down on it when he was asked, at least in the initial stages after he made the comments. And that was what was, I mean, he doubled down on the absurdity. And he didn't say, I mean, he said President Obama is the founder of ISIS.
And
that
Hillary
language
Clinton
is just,
is the
and
MVP.
Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Because of their involvement, because of their role in the administration.
Right.
And the fact, again, that you have your surrogates. I mean, these are his campaign surrogates who will go out and try to justify and rationalize his comments is what makes it even worse.
It's weird because you're like, I get what he's trying to say. And you kind of go, okay, you're pointing towards the foreign policies of your political rivals. I understand
right.
that. And then it's almost like, I don't know if he thinks that we don't get it. And he goes one step further, and we're like, no, we understand what you're saying. And he doubles
he
down on
far.
It. And it goes too far. Then he has to backtrack and say, and then have to go back to the point where we already got it. It's actually bad stand-up comedy.
He thinks people, it's the worst kind of stand-up comedy.
As someone who's done it, that's the issue.
He thinks that everybody is unlearned and doesn't read and has absolutely no idea what the hell's going on in the world. Not to mention, he also said that Obama is the reason for NAFTA, when that's Bill Clinton.
What do you say is the biggest gap?
Oh, without question, the president of the free world who
really?
Wears mom jeans is the leader of ISIS.
I don't know. I get it. I get we move so fast. It's amazing to think it's only really been a week and a couple days since the Captain Khan stuff and the Khan family.
Oh,
it's only a week and a half.
Yeah.
Right. The one that I thought was really, really troubling was the one where he sort of threw out that Second Amendment thing with Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, that was this week.
See,
that was the early part of this week.
Yeah.
Here's the big problem with that. There are people who will take that literally and walk right outside their house prepared to kill Hillary Clinton.
Now, I don't know if it's that. I think more it's about the decorum of a political.
It is just unfit
candidacy.
For anyone in any kind of leadership position. Even if you're a non-leadership position, it is not the kind of rhetoric that you use. But to be positioning yourself to be the president of the United States and to use that kind of language, it's not funny. They were trying to say, oh, it was sarcasm or whatever. However they justified.
Right. Same thing.
But it's not. It's just simply not the rhetoric that you use in any kind of leadership.
And again, you mentioned it before. The surrogates and the pundits go out to somehow justify this. And they throw out the statement, throws out things, the campaign puts out statements, and it makes it worse.
But you know what, Dr. Enya and Justin, just to be fair, what is Trump the leader of? A meat house? He's the dean of a university that failed? What? He's a landlord? Right. What is he leading, really? He's not a leader. And this goes back to the whole thing with him even suggesting and people actually buying into him running for president of the United States. I think Barack Obama said something maybe a week ago now, where he said, you know, I didn't agree with Mitt Romney and John McCain, but I never questioned their ability to be the president of the United States. Why are you all still supporting him? He is like Ernest T. Bass. Ernest T. Bass will throw a brick through a window on Channel 9 every week. Every week. And people will still be like, he's the best. No, he's not. He's a menace.
Yeah.
Why do you have a menace in position to be the man with the codes?
I guess from my point of view, I always feel like I want to give respect to people who run for the highest office in the land, and I just wish that they would give it back.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, because you can go all the way, like you just said. I agree with you, Mario. But I feel like I withhold some of that criticism to say I want to hear what you have to say to lead our country, but I don't feel like that's reciprocated, like our intelligence is being insulted.
Yes, we are. It is insulting. It's offensive, because this isn't a joke. This isn't just something that people's lives will be affected. And this country will be affected, and right now, other countries are already looking at what the United States is doing. We're already sending a very strong message by virtue of the fact that we have someone like Trump that's even in the running. That's sending a strong message that has implications with our standing on the global scale. So we need to think about how serious this really is.
I strongly recommend every human being within listening range that's a registered voter vote in your local elections. Vote for Congress is up. Every seat is available. This is even if Trump does win, which he won't. Even if Trump does win by virtue of those Starship Trooper bedbugs at WHUK. Even if he does win, you can change the face of Congress for many years to come. And that is extremely important. As you have seen over the last 8 years, the legislatures legislate.
Mario Smith and Mara Enya, 312-981-7200. We got some people on the line, Steve, Tom, some others. Stay with us. We'll take a quick break. We've got an update on tonight's news. We'll continue the conversation coming up after 8 o'clock. We still have to get to what was the best story going viral on social media, and also which story from this week will be remembered in 50, 100, 500 years. Sound good? Stay with us. Thank you, Susan. It's the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up here in just a moment, Yoko Noge is going to be here. Yoko Noge, she is a blues jazz musician here in Chicago. She's playing at the Ginza Festival in Old Town this weekend. She's going to perform live for us. I'm so excited to talk to her. Right now, we're wrapping up the week in review. Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. And before we move on to the last remaining categories, let's get some of the listeners involved. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're on the air. What do you think? What do you think is the which one do you want to relate to?
Well, here, let me tell you something. First of all, I'm not much of a political person, but it's pretty obvious this guy got in this thing. He didn't get in it to win. He had no clue it was going to go this far, and now he's trying to figure out ways to get himself out of it. Yeah. And the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter because they're both pathetic.
Hey, Steve, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What do you think, or how do you think it's going to end with Donald Trump and this candidacy? Is it him saying, I quit? Is it them making him leave? What do you think?
He's not going to quit. She's going to win. I mean, she's going to win, okay? I mean, what's he going to do? Go get Dennis Rodman to talk to the guy in North Korea? What's he going to do?
My man, Steve.
I mean, really. And by the way, the thing that people are going to remember 500 years from today is this Cub team.
There you go, Steve.
Show how good this team is.
There you go. That's a great point. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right, Steve.
Take care. All right, let's go to Tom. Tom, what do you think is the story of the week?
Well, the story of the week is the hypocrisy of the media and the double standard. No one got outraged when Hillary Clinton on numerous occasions called Donald Trump the number one recruiter for ISIS. Do you really think she was thinking that Donald Trump was recruiting?
Yeah, maybe you're right there.
A big recruiter? No, she was driving home a point, just like Donald Trump was driving a point when he said Obama and Clinton were the founders of ISIS.
And I think
Homer point, but no one was outraged.
Yeah, Tom, hold on. Let me talk for a second. Just, I think that the difference is, I don't think that the media would have a problem with him saying that if he didn't continually say that that's what he meant. He actually said at one point, literally. And I think that's where the media just kind of puts shrugs their hands.
But no one even challenged Clinton. But yeah, but the media never said Clinton. You keep on calling Donald Trump the number one recruiter for ISIS. Do you really think Donald Trump is recruiting for ISIS and wants to get ISIS bigger and bigger? No one even challenged her on that.
Right.
The media doesn't challenge on the other end, on the opposite side. They won't even.
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for that. I would beg to differ only in the sense that Hillary Clinton is dealing with an email gate that won't go away, and the media loves to talk about it. So,
but
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Tom, for that.
No emails.
Let's see. I've got a lot of great stuff coming in from Texters. 708, the biggest loser is Hillary Clinton, cheating, lying, blood on her hands, enabler of an old reprobate is a loser. Let me see.
Nice.
You pick on Trump.
I can't disagree.
But you like her. She's a commie and a pothead.
A commie pothead. Combo platter.
708 says, I don't think that the ISIS stuff is a gaffe. We got it. Everyone complained about it. Therefore, we support it. I don't know about that. And there's some more stuff here. Another one, 312, made a good point, saying one of the big stories of the week that hasn't been talked about is the lack of an IRS audit, or why the audit is standing in the way of Donald Trump releasing his tax returns, as Hillary Clinton did so today.
Yeah.
All right, so we got a lot of political stuff. Let's move on from politics, unless it shows up in the most viral story on social media. Why don't you start with you, Mario? What are you seeing on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and other places that is grabbing your attention?
Mine was Gabby Douglas not putting her hand over her heart during the pledge when they won the gold medal, when in actuality... not the pledge, I'm sorry, the Star Spangled Banner. Yeah, she can't catch a break.
Really,
her hair,
yeah. she gets it every which way.
But the proper protocol when the national anthem is being played, you don't have to put your hand over your heart.
Right.
You just have to stand at attention.
Right.
That's actually the protocol.
Yeah, she wasn't, think, I mean, just looking at the video and the picture, I mean, she wasn't pulling a...
No.
Was the kid from Denver, the Nuggets,
the Muslim man.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name.
Who wouldn't stand up and sit behind.
Yeah,
that's different.
I mean,
protest,
he was
right?
Exactly. That was an intentional act of protest. Whereas with Gabby Douglas, it was almost like she was just standing there. She was doing what she was supposed to do, which is the Star Spangled Banner is playing and she's listening.
Right.
I do wonder why there is so much scrutiny. It's almost like people are just looking for something, anything to criticize and critique Gabby Douglas, even
anybody.
Simone Biles, any of these individuals,
I
even to make up a story that did go viral.
Yeah, it is interesting, too. And you know, you wonder about it because there have been sort of, I would say, I wouldn't know if it was controversial acts by some other Olympians. I think it was, is it Lily King did the finger wag to the Russian, even Michael Phelps with his face.
Yeah.
And those are celebrated almost positive, and you see some
but
things
with Douglas, who has represented this country on the world stage phenomenally, both in the last Olympics and this Olympics, and the only thing that has gone viral with regard to her is whether she's not patriotic,
so
even though she is bringing home gold medals for this country.
All right, Amara, what do you got for a social media story?
Well, that was actually the one that I saw the most this week. I mean, I actually did not even read the article. I didn't read anything about it because, again, in my mind, I was just off put by the whole concept of you have Gabby Douglas, this woman who has done more in terms of patriotism for this country with her phenomenal performances in the Olympics, both last time and this time. And we're talking about whether or not she put her hand over her heart in the Star Spangled Banner, questioning her patriotism. I don't even have the energy to engage or read any of that, but I noticed it so much.
Let me throw out what I saw this week, and it kind of confused me. I felt like I wasn't sure what I was reading, and that was uproar. Or I guess consternation around the Bud Billiken parade.
See, you're trying to get me in trouble with all the black people again.
I don't know enough about the organization of it, but there have been stories that have been popping up in the last couple of days about the black community being upset with the organizers of the Bud Billiken parade. What's that about?
I think a lot of it stems around the fact that a lot of people view the parade as being kind of organized, not as thorough as they could be, particularly with the issue of black people being hunted down by the police.
It's, Well, just to give backstory, it is a African-American centered parade.
Absolutely. Back
to school.
Years.
87 years old, back historic. To school parade, mm-hmm. to get the kids all excited about back to school.
And one of the issues was, I can never remember the brother's last name, Jamal
Green.
Green. Jamal Green's, I should remember that, right? Jamal Green wanted to have a delegation in the parade, and the Republican parade organizer said no, and part of his delegation was protesting police brutality. And I feel like he feels with an issue like that in a parade that is a black-centered mm-hmm. parade that is supposed to be a back-to-school parade talking about education, what better platform to
now,
educate people than that?
Yeah, I play devil's advocate.
Of course you can.
If you were the organizer of the parade, why would you want to celebrate protest? If it is, wouldn't you rather have bands and, hey, we're all sort of like
but that's what
celebrate
they do.
The positive?
That's what they're doing, though. I think it's valuable to be able to show that there's an issue that is directly affecting black people, not kind of, not around the mm-hmm. corner. It's right there in everybody's face, where you can have that on that platform during the primetime portion of that parade, so everybody can see that this is an issue that we feel needs to be addressed. And by it not being addressed in that parade, it's kind of disingenuous. And going back to what I said a year ago, it might be a good idea just to rethink what really is important. The idea that Marjorie Jordan had years ago was to get kids ready to go back to school and get them prepared to be in class in a few weeks from the parade. And now it's kind of gotten... it's turned into who's going to be there, which politician is walking, who's waving at who. It's lost a lot of its luster to me.
I think that without understanding the logistics behind and some of the infrastructure of the organizers, it's hard for me to really make a judgment about the merits of even if one person or his delegation, Green's delegation, did not get into the parade. Is that solely because of the content, or was it a logistical thing? Did they get their application in on time?
Yeah,
was it made clear that these are the parameters for if you want to participate in the parade? This also goes to the South Shore drill team. Was it made clear in advance that there is a 100-person limit so that they would have to make those difficult decisions about which kids could participate earlier on in the year? To me, it all seemed very last minute. I didn't find out until, what, 2 days ago, all of a sudden there's this chaos around the Bud Billiken parade and these changes that are made.
That's a bummer. And then, so South Shore drill team has been a big part of the parade. They're not in it this year.
For them to not be in that parade is kind of like, you know, the...
you take the headliner out.
Right. It's kind of weird. Yeah. And I think also, just to educate your listeners in Bannockburn, Bud Billiken's a fictional character. There is no one named Bud Billiken. There are no Billikens walking around Halsted. There are no Billikens.
There are no Billikens. Okay. All right. So final, let's wrap this up. Our final category tonight is which story from this week will be remembered in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 100 years, 500 years. What is the historic story of the week?
Come on, man. Pick a Simone. Nina Simone. Simone. Pick one.
Simone,
it's the Simones.
Manuel, yeah.
It's the Simones. Yeah. I think not just for the idea of their Olympic accomplishment. I think they really did. First of all, the young lady gymnast, Simone Biles, she's doing moves that human beings are not shaped to do. And there's a really interesting tutorial. I can't remember which newspaper from the UK did it.
Yeah, they showed all the moves.
They show every move. That's
awesome.
Man, that's incredible.
Yeah, awesome.
I think that's a human spirit kind of story, right? But then you've got this other aspect of it that is just beautiful, which is the idea that there are children, black children, white children, but children watching that going, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to be a gymnast. I want to swim. I want to do all these things because I see these women doing it. I want to do that. I want to be good at it. I want to excel. I want to be better than her. I think that for me, although I didn't really do the Olympics like I normally do, they've been more background noise than anything. I think that is encouraging. I really feel good about that whole story.
And Amara, of course, you feel the same way, right?
I feel 100% the same way. I mean, the historical significance of what they've accomplished. I mean, Simone Biles will go down in history as one of the best gymnasts of all time.
If not the best.
At least thus far, because, you know, they're on celebrating on the shoulders of the Dominique Dawes of the world and so on and so forth. So historically significant, this will go down for years to come.
All right, this was fun.
Hey.
The first one, I appreciate it.
You know, if you invite us back.
You guys are both, you've passed the test, Mario. You can come back.
Thank you.
It was a year-long audition. Mario Smith podcast, The Clock is the Enemy.
That's how it goes. Found.
It's a live taping.
At the Promontory. Yeah, man.
And also, Mara Enya is a former mayoral candidate who is a contributor to the Chicago's Not Broke, funding the city we deserve. Mario, thanks for joining me tonight.
Peace, thank everybody. You.
We're setting up the keyboard here in studio. Yoko Noge is going to be in studio. I'm very excited to have her here. Big fan of her music. Great jazz, blues, a musician who has been in Chicago for 35 years. And she also, she came here from Osaka, Japan, 1984. So we'll talk with her and she's going to play some music. I'm very excited to talk to her. It's going to be fun. She's part of the Ginza Festival, which is going to be at in Old Town this weekend. So we'll talk with her coming up. Also tonight, we will get us updated on all the Olympic highlights. Molly Green coming up at 9:30. And Sandy Marshall's going to be back. We're going to do a special edition of Character Flaws, sketch comedy and improv here in studio, coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. I got a great... I'm excited because Robin Scott's going to join us. Sandy will be here. So it's fun. It's fun to bring that back. As I said at the beginning of the show, Steve Gadlin, the frying pan, off this night. It's the rain scared him away. No, he's on vacation. He's building up ideas. One I think this is funny. I can say this. We were going to have on tonight members of the band Parliament Funkadelic. Yeah. They're in town for the Black Harvest Film Festival. And they didn't show up. It's just like, oh, it's a documentary about George Clinton, and it's about how some of the members of Parliament Funkadelic have been left behind. It's a really interesting documentary. I watched it. It was pretty good. But based on today's experience, there's always two sides to the story. Maybe when I see George Clinton's documentary about these guys, because it's all about how much George Clinton was a jerk, you know, pretty much. But I, you know, maybe they didn't show up, you know. George Clinton's just like, you know, we're trying to get a rehearsal on. These guys just didn't make it. So I don't know. Anyway, it's a good documentary. I don't want to disparage the work because it is cool and it's at the festival. I think it's sold out. It's at the Cisco Center down here in downtown on State Street. It's interesting. I didn't know that much about the backstory of Parliament Funkadelic. And this is the untold story of it. So it's kind of interesting. You know, if you're into late 70s, funk. I did not know this, Pete. You'll like this. This is what I want to talk about, was that there was a band called The Parliaments that was a Motown group. It was like suits and ties kind of stuff, you know, coming out like almost like a almost like an early James Brown type stuff. And they, the way the documentary tells it, is like a lot of bands signed with Motown and then they just shelved them because, you know, they were only promoting one act at the time, you know, so you just kind of waited. And so George Clinton and the Parliaments, they didn't want to wait, so they made a new name, Funkadelic, and when the times were changing in the early 70s, late 60s, they went more that way. And there was a lot of lawsuits and things involved because Motown owned Parliament, and that's why it's Parliament Funkadelic. They're two bands, but it's the same people. See? There you go. We didn't need to do the interview at all. I just gave it to you. And there was a lot of drugs. That is it. That would have been the crux of that 30-minute interview. Would have been like, I would have started there, and then the second question would be like, but what about the drugs? And then it would have been it. So, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Molly Green's going to fan jam the Olympics. See what's going on. I saw some track and field in the prime time. They're making that transition, folks, from swimming to track and field. Always a good transition. And, of course, coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Sandy Marshall, Robin Scott, and Character Flaws will be on. Well, this weekend, Chicago Jazz and Blues takes over the Ginza Holiday Festival. Ginza Holiday Festival, been going on for years at Ginza Holiday here in Chicago in Old Town. It takes place at the Midwest Buddhist Temple. That's at 435 West Menominee in Chicago's Old Town neighborhood. The headliner, Yoko Noge. Yoko is a Chicago blues piano player who's been performing both blues and jazz throughout Chicago for 35 years. She came here in 1984 from Osaka, Japan. In that 35 years, she's kept jazz and blues alive with so many live performances all around the city. She and her band, Jasmine Blues, could be seen at the Hot House, Katarina's, Asian American Jazz Festival. I mean, the music outlives all those places. Like, I just feel like that's... She's brought her keyboard in tonight to perform a couple of songs, and it's my pleasure to welcome Yoko Noge to the download tonight. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
All right, so let's talk about your music. I mean, I'm interested in... I mean, you've done a lot of fusion. You've done jazz, blues. What do you consider yourself when I introduce you? Are you a blues musician, jazz musician?
Well, I think of myself blues-based, kind of jazz or whatever. If jazz can be interpreted as a free music, I mean, whatever I feel like, mm-hmm. I can do, right?
You can do it all?
So I mean, no. If I feel something, I can do something. So that's basically what I do. But I'm based in blues.
Okay. All right. We're still working on a little bit of the technical stuff as we get you on microphone there.
Okay. All right.
You know, if you want, you know what would actually be good? Come up to this microphone here before you play, and we can talk on this microphone, which would be great. There we go. All right.
Okay.
All right. There we go. We got it?
That's better.
And then we also have the... all right. We're good to go. Okay. You want me to do the intro again?
Mm-hmm.
No. Sit down. Okay, so I'm interested because when you came here 35 years ago, and I've known your music for a long time now. I mean, you've played with so many great Chicago jazz musicians, blues musicians. When you came here, what was it about? What did you know about jazz and blues when you came here back in 1984?
Only thing I knew was blues music, and I was listening to the Elmore James. And Big Mama Thornton, you know, Big Bill Brunzi and all that
right.
good stuff, right? And we didn't have really huge access to the blues music, no internet back then. So we had to pretty much go to the specialty record store, and there was a few guys had all the records in their collections, and there was actually a blues bar
okay.
back then.
Yeah.
And so we hung out there.
In Osaka.
Right. And that time I was catching on to the tail end of the Japanese blues boom. And the blues came in, gained its popularity during 19, probably toward the end of 1970.
Okay.
And that was the first time that blues music was really started to catch on among protesters, student protesters.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it kind of coheres with the student movement. And the blues music.
Blues is obviously such a big part of Chicago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a huge part. Being in Osaka, you knew the blues. Was there a differentiation to Chicago blues? Did people know Chicago blues in Osaka?
Well, not in the general public. Not everybody knows.
But you. But let's talk about you. You knew the difference between what was happening here
Texas
and, say,
blues
Mississippi.
And the
or,
Chicago blues right. and Mississippi blues, all different things we hear.
What when you came here, 1984... What were you looking for?
1950-something, right? I came here, right? I came here. My mind was set already that I was going to come to Chicago because Chicago was the blues capital, and so many good performers were there. And I liked urban blues. And so that was my goal to come here. And that time there was no direct flight between Tokyo and Chicago. So I and my three other friends some musicians and my friends all came to L.A., flew to L.A., and we bought a used car, and we drove
all the way here.
Route 66.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, but it took us 15 days.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For you as a musician, did you find it, was it easy for you to find a place in the Chicago blues scene? Was it an open scene to come here and say, I want to play, I want to be a part of this?
You know, I didn't dream of doing it. I was here just to observe and listen and meet people and see what is a real blues scene in Chicago. So I was not expecting that I could sing on the stage with those black musicians. No.
No.
But somehow we went to... we started to go to West Side because my purpose of being here was explore the black neighborhood and blues, black music and blues music, how it was played and how audience was reacting to the music. And so my interest was sort of exploring whole scene of blackness.
When did you realize that you could be a part of that scene, that you had the chops and you had the skill and the ability to get up on stage?
Well, I was pretty much pushed up. First time it was at Mary's Lounge.
Really?
I believe. It was on the South Pulaski, and Willie Kent band was playing, great bass player and a singer. And he was sort of our figure, sort of, he kind of took us under his wing. And he said, well, you are a singer in Japan, right? Because I told him that I sing in Osaka, actually. And he said, well, sing. What? You know, I was like, what are you saying? I can't do that. But anyway, he said, come on. So I went on the stage and started to sing. That was the beginning.
And the rest is history. Yoko Noge in studio with me, a great jazz blues piano player here in town. She's playing the Ginza Holiday Festival in Old Town tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll hear some live music from Yoko Noge here on The Download. Stay with us. Here's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, in studio with me right now, Yoko Noge. She's a Chicago blues musician, jazz musician. She's going to be playing at the Ginza Holiday Festival, which is at the Midwest Buddhist Temple. That's at 435 West Menominee in Chicago's Old Town neighborhood. All right, so what are we going to hear from you live right now, Yoko? What do you got?
Well, let's see. I'm going to play Ruth Brown's tune called Mama, He Treat Your Daughter Mean.
Oh, I love it. Mama, he treats your daughter mean.
Right.
Yoko Noge here live on The Download. Take it away.
Okay. Mama, he treats your daughter mean. I tell you, Mama, he treats your daughter mean. He is a meanest man I ever seen now. Mama, this man is lazy, almost drives me crazy. Mama, he takes my money, makes me call him honey. I have stood all that I could stand. Now what's the matter? Where's this man? I tell you, Mama, he treats your daughter mean. He's a mean as the man that I ever seen. Mama, do you remember what you told me a long time ago? You said, listen to me, girl, don't you never trust a man, 'cause a man is a liar, man is a cheater, girl, you just can't trust any man in this world. At that time, I couldn't believe what you said, Mama, 'cause I was just young and simple, didn't want to listen what you say. But now I know what you said was right, 'cause my man, he treats me as a man. Mama, he treats your daughter, man. I tell you, Mama, my man, he treats your daughter so mean. He's the meanest of men that I ever seen. Mama, this man is lazy, almost drives me crazy. Mama, he takes my money, makes me call him honey. I stood all that I could stand. Now what's the matter with this man, Mama? He treats your daughter mean. He is a meanest man I ever seen. He is a meanest man I ever seen. He is a meanest man. He's a meanest man I ever seen. He's the meanest man I ever seen.
Yeah, all right. In studio, Yoko Noge. She's going to be at the Ginza Holiday Festival, which takes place at the Midwest Buddhist Temple on 435 West Menominee in Chicago's Old Town neighborhood this weekend, tomorrow night, Saturday, 8 o'clock. You know, I mean, this is, it's so interesting to me that, this music that you're going, I mean, this is a music that you've been performing in Chicago for 35 years. What attracts you to the blues like that? What is it about the blues that keeps you playing these songs and continuing this craft?
It's hard to explain. You know, people would say sometimes I was bitten by the blues bug kind of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somehow it's correct. When I was in high school, I listened to Elmore James, Talk to Me Baby. I gotta talk to my baby on the telephone. And when, as soon as I heard that slide guitar coming in, all the chill came up and down my spine. And I was listening to more like Carole King and you know, all spiritual songs and other things. And as soon as I heard that sound, I knew this was what I was looking for, and that was the beginning.
You know, whenever I talk to blues musicians, there always be a the thought, and this is a prevailing thought when it comes to this type of music, that you feel the blues, that you really can't sing the blues or be a part of the blues unless you have the blues. Do you feel that way? Is that something where, I mean, that this music comes from a place that you have to sort of, you know, have the blues to be able to perform the blues?
My understanding of the music and the song is unless you have emotion, unless you have a feeling, you can't sing it. Music without feelings, music without emotion is nothing. I don't care how technically good you are. But in order to connect with people's mind and soul, and you have to have that emotion.
Yoko Noge is playing at the Ginza Holiday Festival tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Can we get another song out of you?
Okay.
What song are we going to hear here?
This is improv.
Improv?
Yeah.
All right.
It's a sort of...
All right, I like it. Yoko Noge, she's going to be at the Ginza Holiday Festival in Old Town coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And here she is live in studio.
走る夜の道赤い花をもげた下げて遠くの山は悲しいかろうそっと一人で 泣く街思い出だけを心に灯し 夜の街を彷徨うのどこかあなたの一人姿見つけることが寂しくて
Yoko Noge in studio tonight, the illustrious 35-year career of jazz and blues here in Chicago. Yoko Noge has been everywhere. I mean, you've performed at festivals. You've been you know, I'd mentioned some of the places, Hot House, Katerina's, the places that aren't around anymore. But
I miss the place.
Yeah, right. But and you're going to be at the Ginza Holiday Festival, which is this Saturday night, tomorrow night, Chicago's Old Town neighborhood at the Buddhist Midwest Buddhist Temple there on Menominee. I can't thank you enough for coming in. Thank you so much for playing and talking to us about the music. I appreciate it. And you got to come back sometime.
Thank you, Justin.
All right. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Molly Green's going to fan jam the Olympics. She's been watching the Olympics primetime coverage, which, to my surprise and delight, has moved on from swimming, which is good. That's always good to move on from swimming. And I'm excited to see a little bit more track and field. I see the track and field semis are starting. I've been waiting for this moment. This is more my speed, you know. Does the U.S. team, I mean, this is the FloJo, the Jackie Joyner Kersee, the Carl Lewis. You know, if you can, Pete, I'd like to see if you can find the Carl Lewis song of him singing. That might be a good theme for us for Fan Jam.
The national anthem?
No. There is a song in which Carl Lewis sings. I think he tried to be an R&B star, pop star, after his running career. And the best part about it was he did a video for it. You know, it's like I forgot what it's called. It was hilarious. And he did a video for it in which it was a mixture of him singing, curling dumbbells, and just clips of him running. So it's really good stuff. It's really good. If anyone has a bona fide copy of that, I will buy it off you. That's my swap meet. In studio with me right now, Sandy Marshall. What's up, Sandy? Good to see you, buddy.
Hi, Justin.
You're very funny
back
in the carryout tonight. Thanks for doing that.
You know, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm always a fan of the carryout. You know, big fan of the download. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Sandy, of course, lives in Canada.
That's right.
And he's back, I would say you're back every 6 months or so.
Yeah, it's a solid, you know, every, like, twice a year.
Twice a year. So you're back in town, and tonight we're going to do character flaws. We're going to have some fun and do that. Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Do you watch the Olympics in Canada?
I watch some of the Olympics. I'm a fan of the swimming. I like the diving. But we get NBC, so we've
your lady. TV. Your lady's hardcore Canadian.
She's hardcore Canadian.
So does she go for the Canadian athletes? You don't care about the Americans?
You know, she doesn't watch the Olympics that much. But if she did, she would go for the Canadian athletes. She's more into, like, the Canadian musicians, you know?
Sure.
Hey, these guys are big in Canada. Nobody knows them in the U.S., but we're big in Canada kind of a thing. But not as much the Olympics. We haven't been playing the Olympics too much. We've been, like, hardcore Stranger
Things.
Well,
in this country,
is how we do it.
This is how we do it. We have pride for our athletes. I don't know how
you guys do it in
Canada. Yeah.
No, we have a lot of maple syrup. We watch hockey a couple times a year. We like to go logging, you know.
Rob Martyr is not here. He's on vacation, so he misses you.
Because you guys
could go back and forth on your Canadian references all night.
Yeah.
But I'm just interested to see, like, because I know that it was a Canadian broadcaster who last night messed up the Phelps Lochte swimming deal. And I don't know, was that a national broadcast? Because we didn't really talk about it, or if it was just a Canadian thing, radio or something like that. Did you see this, Pete? So essentially, there's two guys, you know, that the swimming guys, and it was a Canadian guy. And he mixed up the lanes of Phelps and Lochte, because I guess they were right next to each other. And by doing it, towards the end, he was getting all excited that Ryan Lochte was winning. Because Michael Phelps was pulling away. And he's like, Lochte, little finish! Yeah! Oh, wait, that's Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't really screw up. I mean, you screw that up. And today he had this real heartfelt kind of like, I screwed up. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really that big of a deal.
No.
You know, but it was funny. I mean, I guess if you're going to do an Olympic call on a gold medal and you're acting as if the one guy's upsetting the favorite, you're making a huge mistake.
You want to get it right.
Yeah, you got to get it right. You can't really, there's no, it's not like in football where you're like, the number 62 of the, oh, no, that's 50. You always give a football person, if they get the name wrong or the number wrong, you always give them a little bit of space because it's so hard to tell who's who.
Same with the space program. Oh my gosh, we have a whole shuttle. Oh, it's just the robot arm.
You're right. You're big into space. That's your thing. You know, I've always liked Sandy's, Sandy once told me he doesn't really like team sports. He's more of an individual sports
Thank
guy.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
I'll always remember that because when you're growing up, you're more of a tennis.
Like a tennis and skiing kind of thing. You know, anything where you had to pass the ball.
Yeah, you were not into pass. You're just not into teamwork.
Yeah, into teamwork or collaborating, you know, or building on other people's ideas. You know, right. Setting someone else up to succeed.
No, that's not your thing.
My bag.
Yeah, no. But
which is why hopefully tonight's mostly monologue. You know what I mean? Hopefully, like the back and forth, not so much of the talky talk.
Sandy's in tonight, as I mentioned at the end of the 8 o'clock hour. We were supposed to be visited by three ghosts. We were supposed to be visited by members of the band Parliament Funkadelic.
Yeah.
Who did not show up.
Yeah.
There wasn't even like a PR person. It's like, I'm so sorry, we're late. They just, nothing. Radio silence.
They just didn't update the app.
Nope.
It just didn't happen.
Someone may be on the wrong time zone. I don't know what the deal is. And then every time I say that to somebody, like I said it to Jeff Carlin, some other people, they didn't show up. They're like, oh, yeah, well, it's Funkadelic. Cool. And they make sort of like a drug reference. Yeah. These guys are 60. You know, maybe 65 now. It's not like they're like 28 or other rappers from or 19 or like, oh, we got to go to the studio. You know what I mean?
These are constantly partying as well.
Right. I mean, even if they are, let's say that they are drug users in any form, they still know how to function at this point, right? Like that. So I always kind of joke about the idea that it's not that they were too high to come to the show.
Well, and there's also 80 of them, right?
Yeah. These were three of them. They're three. And I was really excited because two of the three are from the offshoot band Brides of Funkenstein.
Okay.
It was a offshoot group that George Clinton put together, and it was three women that were backup singers for Parliament Funkadelic, and he made Brides of Funkenstein.
Really?
And they ended up actually, we don't need to do the interview. I know all the info. I have to do this, by the way, everybody, because I did so much prep today. Like, they're gone. They're out of town. Tomorrow, it's over. So I'm not going to get another chance to talk to them, so I need to just get this off. That's how it works. I have to dump it. If I don't dump it, it'll stay with me, and next week we'll be talking to somebody, and I'll be like, let me talk about Parliament Funkadelic with you. It's not worth it. So I have to dump. But what they said was the documentary talked about it and the prep that this was an offshoot group, and it was an R&B group from the late 70s. It was three women, and they were signed by Atlantic Records. They were going to be like sort of like trying to think of Rick James had a didn't they have a Mary Jane Girls? Like there was a point when funk music in the late 70s sort of made a move from male dominated to female dominated. There was like a Donna Summers and a move towards like almost like out of disco music. Mm-hmm. And the Brides of Funkenstein had a hit and they were going to be the next big thing. And this documentary talks about George Clinton wasn't having it. Like George Clinton tried to stop it. And
really?
He tried to stop the album being released because it was only one star in the group, and it was George Clinton.
Really?
That's what the documentary. But again, two sides to every story since, they didn't show up. If they would have shown up, we would be talking about this, and then we'd all go, that's fact. But now we're like, yeah, maybe George Clinton was right to leave these guys behind since they didn't show up. They don't show up to stuff.
Yeah, he's like, they never showed up.
Yeah,
what'd you expect? They came to 10% of the gigs.
Exactly. I don't know. We called them. We called the PR guy. We didn't know where they were at.
Yeah, so they didn't even instruments.
We were about to do Flashlight in the studio, and they just weren't there. So they're not in the band anymore.
So they don't get paid.
They don't get paid.
You don't show up, you don't get paid. And then you make a documentary about it.
All right, coming up here, 312-981-7200. What I want to do tonight is something we talked about earlier in the week. Since the guys from Parliament P-Funk, they did not show up tonight, I thought it'd be a good opportunity, Pete, for us to do the SNL draft. We talked about it on Wednesday, and we really kind of were enjoying this week. Taron Killam and Jay Farrow and John Rudnitsky were not renewed. They were fired from the SNL cast. And it got us thinking about what, because Lorne Michaels came out and said, in the next month, we're going to bring in several new cast members. And we started thinking, well, maybe that's Chicago, maybe some comics that we know. And then we said, well, wouldn't it be great if Lorne Michaels, and he's never going to do this, but if Lorne Michaels went to that 1983, 84, 85 model where it was like, I'll just get Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest and you know, Martin Short, guys who are already known to come in, right? And just make an all-star cast. Like, that would be a great thing to do. Yeah. So if you were going to do that today, who would be in your cast? So we're going to do an SNL draft coming back. Sandy's got draft people. Pete's got some people. I got some people. We'll see if Susan wants to play. But who would be, if you want 312-981-7200, if you had a draft pick, if you wanted to pick five cast members to be in the new SNL cast, could be doing anything, could be big movie stars. Let's say the money's no object. They all want to be cast members.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be your ideal ensemble for SNL?
And you get five.
You get five. Okay. And then, and what I'd like to do is one unknown.
Okay.
Like a comic that you love who plays at the Lincoln Lodge or that you know in the that wouldn't be, like, you know, I think someone said Steve Carell last, when we were talking on Wednesday, and I was like, yeah, that's a big one. But instead of Steve Carell, like more like an Ian Abramson, you know, like that kind of thing where you, that's your one unknown. It's like a punter, you know, when you're going to get a kicker for fantasy football. All right.
Someone who's in the business, but they're not a
Yeah,
super
they're a comic,
star,
but maybe they're new. Name. Yeah, but and you just think that they'd be great to be on the show. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break.
Live from New York, it's Saturday night.
All right, it's a time. Nice work with the old Saturday Night Live. This is Tim Kazurinski. It's got that vibe, which is perfect for our SNL draft tonight. Here on the download, 312-981-7200. Sort of like a fantasy football draft, but instead we're drafting the best comedians you'd have on an ensemble, on a late night live sketch variety show. Sandy Marshall in studio. Pete Zimmerman here, of course. We'll go around the horn. I like this because you really could pick anybody. It could be a serious actor. It could be someone with chops. It could be a stand-up. It could be the biggest movie star in the world. It's really open to interpretation. You know, and then I want you to show your math a little bit, too. Like, you can't just say, no, you know, Steve Carell.
Yeah.
And then be like, well, why? You got to tell us why. Why would you want him to be on the show?
You need to have a couple of compelling reasons.
Right.
Maybe reference some work. Talk about the cast dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. That's what this is called, cast dynamics. All right. I'll start. You want me to start? I'll start. Because Pete's on the line getting people up. All right, I'll start. If I were going to pick my number one pick, right, to be the new relaunched SNL, more young kids, no more sort of developing talent, no more who's going to be the next sitcom star. This is paying big money, come out of retirement, who I want to be on SNL, Dave Chappelle.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Let it sink in. One of the best shows of all time, Chappelle's Show.
Yeah.
He was a lead. He did great sketch comedy. That show, even to this day, the sketches that he puts together not only are well written, I mean, he's a great writer, and Neil Brennan helped him and all the writers that were on that show, but he was able to do great performances. His character work, his impressions of Rick James, of Prince, of R. Kelly, like down the line, he was able to do some impressive work in the character department. So my number one pick is Dave Chappelle. All right. Let's go to Pete. Pete, who do you have as your number one pick?
My number one pick is Dave Chappelle. I know. I had it on my list.
Wow.
See, there you go.
Speaking of like, so I'm going to have to go down to number two. And this is
just like fantasy based football.
Yeah.
I took Tom Brady. What are we going to get?
This is going to make, this may throw some people for a loop.
Let's go for, what do you got?
John Hamm.
John Hamm.
Who is a famous actor, played Don Draper on Mad Men. But if you've seen him on Saturday Night Live, he's a very funny comedian as well. He has good comic chops.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a lot of sitcoms. He shows up. For a while, he was doing, like, you could ask John Hamm to do anything, and he would show up for it.
30 Rock, he was great, All right, John Hamm. All right, Sandy, you're up. What do you think for your number one pick for the new cast of SNL?
Great. So the number one pick for the SNL draft is from the Chicago area. She has deep roots in improvisation.
Okay.
She, in film, owns every single scene that she's in, and she's had a pretty strong career on television on multiple shows.
Shelley Long.
Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch. She's great.
Number one pick.
I like that pick. That's a strong pick because she just her work in Best in Show as the dog wrangler.
So brilliant. Man, Mighty so Wind.
Yeah.
I think her scenes in A Mighty Wind, where they play that sort of super glossy, mm-hmm. you know, band, you know, mm-hmm. with the 11 band members, probably the same number of members as Parliament. Going back to
exactly.
that. She's just hilarious. And she plays the straight character so well. She's always got 15 things going on with her characters. And she just, the way she plays status is so solid. And she always makes me laugh out loud.
All right. Going to the lines. Let's just get the listeners involved. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, who would be your number one pick, Kathy?
Larry David.
Nice. Right? That's a brilliant number one pick. Why Larry David?
Because you can do the political, the old grumpy Jewish man with him. And he's so funny. A funny writer.
All right, you know what I'm going to do? Because we kind of do it like a round robin. We go back around. What would be your number two pick?
Well, somebody took Johnny M, so that's a bummer. But I like Stephen Wright. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, of course, the stand-up?
He's the one. Yeah, he's the one that did, you know, I put a jar of instant coffee in my microwave and I went back in time.
It's a great joke.
Kind of these obtuse jokes that are hilarious.
I like that, Kathy. You've picked two strong ensemble members for Fantasy Saturday Night Live. We appreciate it. Thanks for playing. She took some big names off the board early. Larry David and Stephen Wright. 262 and 773 want to play as well, and we'll make them one team here, okay? So for 779 and 262. And their number one pick, Amy Schumer.
Hilarious.
Agreed, because Amy Schumer is a tremendous again, you can't go wrong because she is in a sketch show in which she plays most every character. So mm-hmm. if you watch, she can get it done.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And in the recent movie that she did, what was the name of the movie? It's
Trainwreck.
Trainwreck.
Yeah, she's a star.
She's such a great actress.
Yep. All right. I'll go next, and I'm gonna go off script. I'm gonna go with someone. All right, you guys ready? We talked about this guy last. We talked about him on Wednesday, and I'm going to take him with my number two pick. You ready? I'm going to take Aziz Ansari.
Ah,
great.
Yeah.
Yep. Paul. Aziz Ansari, who was in Human Giant, so he knows sketch comedy. He had starring role in Parks and Rec. He'd steal the show every time he came on stage, and obviously what he does with Modern Romance now. So, I mean, he's a tremendous, tremendous talent. Aziz Ansari can do a lot of stuff. All right, Pete?
Mr. Neil Patrick Harris.
Ooh, you can do a song and dance man.
Song and dance man.
A song and dance
man. You need
man.
One of those on a sketch show.
You do. A song and dance man.
Because
I
was going to take Justin Timberlake.
Right.
He's still on the he's on the board.
He's on the board, yeah.
And I don't know, but I just had a feeling that Neil Patrick Harris could, he's a little bit better than JT.
All right, I like that.
As far as the acting and the comedy.
You know, he plays dark really well, too. Remember the guy who played in Gone Girl? That David Lynch? It's like director's name.
David Fincher.
David Fincher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The David Fincher movie, Gone Girl. He was great in that. So, you know, he's going to be good in those, like,
yeah.
you know, sort of late night sketches.
All right, Sandy, what do you got for number two?
He's an actor from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
All the way from a little known movie called Oxford Blues to recent hits like The West Wing, Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe.
Oh, yeah.
I think Rob Lowe is one of the funniest people out there, and he continually makes fun of himself in just the right way.
I don't know with that pick and Jane Lynch if you're building SNL or doing like Hollywood Game Night.
I'm building
Feels
Hollywood
like a Hollywood Game Night cast.
I'm actually secretly building a Hollywood game show.
Did you watch that Grindr Man or whatever that show? Wasn't he on that? Was he on
was
that
he
show?
On that show?
Grind
yeah,
was on
yeah,
Fox
right.
or whatever.
He was like the, he was like the lawyer.
Yeah.
With Fred Savage.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right. It got canceled.
Yeah.
I'll let the calls get some in here so they take some more off the table, or some texters at least. Our buddy Chris Churchill's listening on Facebook. Chris says Bryan Cranston.
Great.
For a number one pick. He is very funny. He can do a lot of different things, and he's serious, and he can play a lot of different types. That's really what you're looking for. Let's see what else we have here. 262 says, let's do this one. Let's do 630 says Bill Burr. That's an early reach for a Bill Burr, but Bill Burr's good. Tim from Plainfield likes Bill Burr.
Bill Burr's hilarious. His stand-up specials are great.
Yeah.
And he's very brash, you know? Mm-hmm. He feels sort of like a Colin Quinn kind of a pick.
847 says, number one, I'd pick Christopher Walken. And number two, this is great, Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, that's great. I mean, those are a couple of real specific picks where both of those guys are going to play versions of themselves.
Could
that's
you
interesting.
Imagine an SNL with Christopher Walken and Nick Cage? 630 took my number three pick, and I'm bummed. 630 takes his number one. Their number one is Andy Kaufman.
Great.
Andy Kaufman, of course, one of the legendary experimental comedians and has done such great stuff. And that is off the board. 847's turn. You know what you should do? I should have done something instead of them just being able to throw names out. They should throw names out and then tell me what the name of their team is. Like it's fantasy football. You know? Like
great idea.
Yeah. So I know, so I can keep track. 847's team, they're on the clock. They picked Josh Gad, which is not a bad choice because Josh Gad is hilarious in that Billy Crystal sitcom he did. I forgot the name of the one where they're doing a sketch show, and he's kind of the star that's on with Billy Crystal. I think it was a Starz show. I can't remember, or maybe an IFC or FX. Very funny show. Josh Gad is brilliant. Josh Gad. All right.
Great.
262, second pick, because they picked Amy Schumer. Their second pick, Christopher Lloyd. Wow.
Great pick.
This is fun. Right? Isn't it fun?
So one quick thing on Christopher Lloyd, mm-hmm. bringing back Andy Kaufman as well. So I hadn't seen Man on the Moon in about 20 years since it came out.
The Jim Carrey movie?
The Andy Kaufman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And Christopher Lloyd's in it, and he plays himself, right? And he's
really
good in it. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He's really good in it.
Yeah, I'd have to rewatch that. I feel like we saw that together in a movie theater.
We saw it together at that movie theater in Clybourne.
Yeah, right. Webster.
And the Webster place, which is it still there? They need to.
It is. They revamped it. No, they revamped it. It's like now one of the hot ones.
It was due in the 60s to be revamped. I mean, hopefully Eddie Z's cut him a deal.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do some more SNL draft here on the download. We'll take it up to the next break and then we'll have Molly join us. All right, stay with us. 312-981-7200. Thank you, Susan. We're playing SNL Fantasy Draft here on the download. Fun little game. We got a lot of people playing tonight, which is great. 312-981-7200. The point to put together the best SNL cast of living people. I made a mistake. You can't have deceased people. I said Andy Kaufman. You can't do that because then, as Sandy points out, someone could say Abraham Lincoln. You know, and then you're just at a point where, I mean, this is really truly what you'd want to see on stage now. So you have to honor the people that have fallen before you. You can't put them on the cast. Susan Berkus, who would you pick as a number one cast member for Saturday Night Live if you could choose?
Eddie Murphy.
There you go. I didn't see, you can bring back old cast members.
You can bring back old. Okay, great.
Yeah.
That's what I hope, because that's the first thing that flashed into my mind. Some vintage Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy. All right. I like that. What would you go with number two?
Number two, okay.
We'll give you number two so you can catch up.
All right. How about, let's see, Chevy Chase.
There you go. You're staying with the SNL.
I'm just staying.
We've seen this show before.
I know. Oh, but see, what you really want is new folks, right?
I see Esmeralda's up there.
Esmeralda's up there. So you guys said Andy Kaufman already, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, and I just did a new, rule where I'm like, you know what, deceased doesn't count. Because if they're and a lot of people would argue he's not dead, but for those who the conspiracy theory, you can't have deceased because then it's truly fantasy. They have to have some, like, the idea that they could be put into rotation now. You know what I mean? So Andy Kaufman doesn't really work.
Okay, how about Melissa McCarthy?
Yes, that's a great one. There you go. All right, Esmeralda, I'm getting. I know you don't start till 10 o'clock, but I see you up there.
No, I start at 11.
You do?
I'm co-hosting with
you
Mark
are?
Carmen.
Oh, 11 that's
to
awesome.
2.
Oh, what are you guys going to talk? Well, you know what? We'll talk
I'm
about
just
it.
Up here hanging for a minute.
I love it. I actually, you're right. I lost track of the days. I'm like, what are you doing here? Usually it's Either Rob does the traffic or Badish comes in, right?
Right. I just live here now. I live in the traffic studio.
Exactly. All right. If you were going to pick the living comedian, who's your number one SNL cast, like a fantasy SNL cast, anybody in the world, who's the first person you would pick to put on that cast?
Now, this might not be so far-fetched, but the girls from, oh my gosh.
Broad City.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
They're so good.
They're on my list.
They're good.
See, right there, Susan and Esmeralda took two big players off the list, Broad City and Melissa McCarthy.
And then I'm going to throw some Chicago love.
All right.
Cameron Esposito.
Oh, early.
I just saw her online show.
Is that a good show?
It's adorable.
We had Rhea talking about it.
Yeah.
It was good. Yeah. All right, good. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's get the phones involved. Let's go to Andy. Andy, you're going local. Who do you like, Andy?
Well, Justin, my team is called Second City for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And my team would consist of Tim Kazurinsky, Aaron Freeman,
yeah,
and, of course, the pride of Norwood Park, Teddy Vasquez.
Hey, that's great. That is a great lineup. Aaron Freeman and I worked together for years. I was
Aaron's
Aaron's producer on a show called Metropolis. Aaron's great. He's hilarious. Does Council Wars. That's a good one. I like that, Andy. You took
great,
my local. That was good. And Patty Vasquez on there too. Absolutely. All right, let's go to Tom. What do you like, Tom? Tom, who would you go with?
Okay, I'm going with 30 Rock alumni Jane Krakowski.
Oh, the first
Jack
pick.
And Jack McBryer. He's also a Second City
alum.
Yep,
he is. He
great
is.
Picks.
And he's hilarious. All right. I like that. Those two can do anything. So that McBrayer is perfect because, and Jane too, because she can do song and dance.
She's obnoxious and he's more subtle. And so that's a good balance.
Right away, you got a good foundation. All right. Thanks, Tom. All right. I'll go next. Right. And I'm glad that he's still on the table. And I'll take him, Zach Galifianakis.
Good.
With a third round pick. That's like a running back. That's a steal. Third round pick. Zach Galifianakis. It's ridiculous that he's still on the board.
And I'm surprised we didn't get there because Pete brought up John Hamm.
Right. And they have
and
a
I
great
think John Hamm is funniest in that between two
yeah.
friends.
That's they have a great rapport. All right, Pete, you're up on the you're eye on the clock.
All right, it's time to get a woman in my cast.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be another curveball. Anna Kendrick.
Oh, interesting. I would not have her on my list, but
I think she's funny.
Yep.
She can sing and dance. She can play.
You're giving your cast a lot. I mean, you've got John Hamm, Neil Patrick Harris, and Anna Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving a lot of flexibility. They got acting chops or in serious stuff. They can sing. They can dance. They can host award shows. There's a lot going on there.
They all have managers.
They have good management. Sandy, who you got for your third pick?
Yeah, I didn't tell you that the name of the team I'm representing is the Cross Border Lightning Bolts.
The Cross
Border. You know, so Canada and America. I'm going to pick a Canadian this time around. This is somebody from a very famous sketch comedy troupe from Toronto, who is my favorite of all of them. The one and only Bruce McCullough.
Yeah, that's good.
Was he on your list?
The Kids in the Hall would be on my list.
Oh,
Bruce
all
McCullough,
of them.
But Bruce is good.
Great.
Oh, you could do so much.
I think
much
Bruce
with
McCullough
him.
Is by far the funniest.
Oh,
of them.
That's
a good personality
one.
Test, too.
Wow, that's a good one. Yeah. Oh, man, I can't believe I left the Kids in the Hall on the list.
They're off now. Well, you mean there's still four left.
630 says, here's my three. Steve Martin, number one. Number two, Billy Crystal. Number three, Tim Conway and Carol Burnett.
Oh, wow.
I'm going for an old cast there. 815 says they'd go with David Lynch.
Great.
You know, you got to have a video artist, right? You have to have a
digital short by
digital
David
short by David Lynch. Lynch. I love it. All right, let's go to Patrick. Patrick, who's your number one pick?
Are you guys not missing? Everybody's missing Paul Reubens.
Oh, Pee-wee Herman. That's right. I would pick.
I've seen him act in three different movies, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
He is awesome as an actor, not only as his goofy Pee-wee Herman. But
right. I like it, man. I like it. Good call, Patrick. Good call.
Awesome.
Thanks,
he's
man.
Good to that acting point. He's really good in a movie called Blow, a Ted Demme sleeper from the mid-90s,
Depp
movie. Paul Reubens is great in that.
847's got a number one pick that I had next. John C. Reilly.
Oh.
John C. Reilly, totally underrated. He would be a great SNL cast member. Could you imagine? Do you ever see Check It Out with Steve Brule? Like the show on Adult Swim?
Yes, oh, I love those.
That's the best show ever.
Those are great.
Another vote for Patty Vasquez.
Great.
So Patty's got two.
She has two.
773 says, my number one pick would be Jason Alexander from Seinfeld.
Great.
My second would be Patrick Warburton. Love him. Jim. This is from Jim from Florida. Patrick Warburton does he does The Tick. He was The Tick. He's also on Seinfeld. He's hilarious. You're right. All right. Are we back around to the top? Okay, so my turn. Oh, man, I have not picked. I have picked Dave Chappelle, Aziz Ansari, and Zach Galifianakis. Man, and I really need to get a woman on my cast because that means I'm going to, the next three picks are going to have to be.
That's right.
But I'm going to go with a guy.
Okay.
Because I think that I am buying into Pete Zimmerman's approach to song and dance, and I will go with Seth MacFarlane.
Wow. Yeah.
Steal at the four slot, right?
I feel like Seth MacFarlane on SNL brings like a whole network with him.
Yeah.
Oh, just a whole nother.
Voices, all the stuff you can do.
Yeah.
All right, Pete. Who's your four?
Number four is an actor. He's got a really, I'm looking forward to his new series coming up on FX. Mm-hmm. You may have seen him in Community, Donald Glover.
Ooh. He's fantastic.
And
he's
he can
so
rap.
Funny.
Another sing and dance guy.
Could be the musical guest if somebody drops out.
Yeah, he totally could. He was great in The Martian, by the way.
What is Donnie Glover? What is it?
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. It's Glover? I always thought it was Glover. No, you're closer to the kids than I am.
Childish Gambino.
Yep, Childish Gambino.
Pete, what's your team name?
Team Zimmerman is my every fantasy football name.
Great.
Has been for the last 15 years.
Okay, great.
All right. Sandy, what do you got for your number four pick?
The number four pick is someone who we know who Ooh. Is not a household name.
Okay.
Who I personally think is one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life.
Okay.
He lives in L.A. He's an actor. He's been on some shows, done some works on a bunch of commercials, like one of those gamer guys. Andrew DeWitt.
Well, that's name. Pretty early.
He's a very funny dude. I wanted to make sure he got
that's
in.
That's your unknown. Andrew DeWitt's a funny kid. Hey, kid, he's probably 35 now.
We've known him for a really long time. Yeah. And I would say just pound for pound, laugh for just laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Laugh a minute. You're just never not laughing when you're with Andrew DeWitt.
There you go. Not, wow, listen, Andrew DeWitt getting up. Sandy going with his unknown yeah. early. 708 says, how does Donald Glover go before Hannibal Buress? Hannibal Buress still on the clock. Maybe some injury issues after that last show he had.
And he has a background with the show. He was a writer, right?
He was. 815, Eugene Levy.
Great call.
Yeah, great call. 630 says, how about Charlie Sheen?
He'd be Maybe. Great.
773 took someone who is currently on the cast, Kate McKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good. Yeah. 630 says, Bobcat Goldthwait. And then 224, who's already on the number two, his number two is Molly Shannon.
Great. Superstar.
There's a lot of good stuff here. Wow. I feel like I'm missing a lot. There's so much coming through fast. 847 says Allison Brie.
Great.
That's a good pick, yeah. 630 says Tim from Plainfield. Tim picked Bill Burr number one. Number two would be Steve Coogan. Wow, you're going, those are some deep cuts. 847 says Annette O'Toole. Wow. All right. I'm up, right? Fifth pick? Oh, jeez.
What's your team name, by the way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say the... let me come back. Let me think about it. I think my team name would be something political, Chicago politics, like a Daily Double. Daily Double. You know, something like that. My number five would be Kristen Schaal. I know it's early. You know, because of fifth, but I would pick Kristen Schaal.
That's a good pick.
All right, quick around the horn for Pete and for Sandy, sure. And we'll take a break. What do you got, Pete, for your fifth pick?
Grab another female, Miss Chelsea Peretti.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that opens up a world of opportunity. She's hilarious. All right, Sandy, what do you
she
got?
She is hilarious. On the heels of Chelsea, Ali Wong.
Ali Wong.
Who is a comedian. She has a Netflix special that I saw a few weeks ago. Called Baby Cobra. And it is the
Ali
funniest.
Ali Wong and Andrew DeWitt. Is
funniest,
who,
funniest.
So you've got a cast that's got Jane Lynch, Rob Lowe, Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall, Ali Wong, and Andrew DeWitt.
And the casting brilliance, yeah. I guarantee yeah. you get an Emmy nomination.
Let's see what's on Netflix with that cast. All right. Take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll keep going. I want to thank, what a great day. What a great cast. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We're playing SNL Fantasy Draft. If Lorne Michaels was going to go the way of the show or in the early 80s when they brought in Christopher Guest and Billy Crystal and decided to do an all-star cast, what would he do in 2016? Who would he pick to be part of SNL 2016? A lot of great, great stuff being thrown out tonight. We've gone five rounds through, and we're just going to keep going. Should we just keep going here? We'll go till the news at 10 o'clock. I mean, there's some great stuff. 630 says, how has no one said Justin Timberlake? Well, Zimmerman did. He didn't choose Justin. Instead, he took you took Neil Patrick Harris instead of Justin Timberlake.
I thought he might still be on the board
he
when
is.
I came back. Well, they
well,
took
they
him.
Just took him. 847 yeah. Elizabeth Banks.
Oh yeah.
224 Wayne Brady.
Yeah.
847 says Tim Meadows. 224 took mine, and this has been taken a couple times. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Whoopi Goldberg. 312 says Donald Trump.
Okay.
773 says local Michael Palasak, Richie March, Antoine McKay, Jack Slosh. All right, those are all good people. Antoine McKay is great.
He'd be so good on that show.
Yep. Okay, is it my turn? Am I back up? All right, I'm ready. Here's what I do. My number six pick, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Great one.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah, you can't go wrong there. I'm surprised that Jason Alexander's off the board and she's not. Because Jason Alexander's great as George. Larry David is great. Larry David was the number one pick. But how do you pick those guys over Elaine?
Yeah.
Elaine was like, I mean, she that's one of the strongest characters of all time.
She's the core of the show.
And she's been on the show and she didn't do well on the show, so she's back now. She's better than ever. All right, what do you got, Mr. Zimmerman? Team Zimmerman.
I'm going to go with a guy who made his name on a little place called Broadway. And he's on Girls.
Uh-oh.
Andrew Rannells.
There you go. That's the guy who plays her friend who...
Her gay friend, whatever his name
is.
Yeah,
and he's also... Isn't he on Hamilton?
He was the original in Book of Mormon with Josh Gad.
Got it. He's hilarious. You're right. That's a good call. All right.
Andrew Rannells.
What do you got over here, Sandy Marshall?
Deep cut, ensemble star of a little known movie called Clue. Mr. Martin Mull.
Martin Mull. All right. Can I read your, you know what? I'll spare you. There's a lot. That's a hilarious cast. All right. 815 just took my, darn it. I should have been able to use my power as host to veto, but 815 says Carrie Brownstein.
Oh, great.
Yeah. From Portlandia.
Oh, she's so funny in Portlandia.
773 says Bill Leff. I agreed.
Great.
606 says Paula Poundstone.
Yeah. Saw her one time at Gustavus Adolphus University in Minnesota in the 80s, do stand-up.
Rocky, who you like, Rocky?
Hey, I wanted to tell you guys that when I first seen Chris Farley on SNL, I thought, no. He said his biggest inspiration was John Belushi, and I said, no, you're no John Belushi. A year later, I would stop everything I would do and go home and watch Chris Farley. Hmm. I didn't know what he was going to do.
Yeah. Chris Farley's great, but he falls, unfortunately, into the category of deceased, so he wouldn't be a good choice. But Chris Farley was tremendous. Agreed. Thanks, Rocky. All right, so we got the seventh pick here. Here we go. We're coming to the end here. Am I on the clock?
Yeah, you're up. Did you figure out a team name?
Yeah, the Daily Double. I like that.
Okay.
773 takes Jim Gaffigan.
Good.
630 says Jim Carrey. 224 says Tim Curry.
Tim Curry. That's two cast members from Clue.
See? You, okay, my number seven, Nick Kroll.
Great.
How Nick Kroll dropped to the seventh round is beyond me. How has Nick Kroll not been mentioned? You want to get anyone who's had their own show, right? There's still a couple out there, too, that I'm surprised that had their own sketch shows that have not been picked yet.
Yep.
Pete Zimmerman, seventh pick.
I'm going to go with another TV star on a little show called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Titus Burgess.
That guy's hilarious.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to do a lot of musical numbers.
You are. You got a lot. It's going to be a song and dance show. All right. Sandy Marshall, number seven.
Number seven for me is a no-brainer. I just saw him in Central Intelligence, which was written by our buddy Ike Barinholtz. Kevin Hart.
Oh, yeah.
Makes me laugh in literally everything.
Do you ever watch The Real Husbands of Hollywood?
No, I haven't seen that. We don't get it up north. We get The Real Husbands of Halifax.
You are in for a treat.
Really?
It's five seasons of Kevin Hart playing himself.
So pumped.
I thought Kevin Hart was funny, and then I watched that show, and I'm like, Kevin Hart is hysterical.
Really?
And he's on that show, so you should check that show.
Good, good, good.
All right. So we're pretty much towards the end here. The last person I would pick, you need someone to bring it together. It's between two guys here. I will take Jason Mantzoukas. Yeah, Pete, I have Pete on the list, right? Jason Mantzoukas, of course, from Nick Kroll's show and everything else. He's the kind of Middle Eastern dude with the Greek. Is he Greek? I think he's Greek. With the huge beard.
He's super funny.
That guy's hilarious. All right. What do you got, Pete?
I've been watching a lot of Netflix, so I'm going to go from Lady Dynamite, Maria Bamford.
Oh, man.
Great call. That show is great.
I did a terrible job here. I did a great job. These great comedians, but it's not balanced. Just a bunch of white dudes. Sandy?
I'm going with a white dude, but I think he has some of the funniest content ever. Here he is, David Cross.
Oh, man. How can you do that? Then that'll be the last pick for us. Bob Odenkirk does not get picked. He's a free agent. How is that possible? Billy Eichner just came through. That's Pauly Shore, 815.
That's a weasel.
One. Yeah. All right, so let me go through the cast really quick here as we wrap up. Sandy said Jane Lynch, Rob Lowe, Bruce McCullough, Andrew DeWitt, Ali Wong, Martin Mull, Kevin Hart, and David Cross.
Come on, that's amazing.
Jane Lynch and Ali Wong would be your women. All right, that's amazing is a word for it. Team Zimmerman goes John Hamm, Neil Patrick Harris, Anna Kendrick, Donald Glover, Chelsea Peretti, Andrew Reynolds, Titus Burgess, and Maria Bamford. Another show that I might take a look at if it was on demand.
That's good.
No commercials.
Like, it's like the cast of a feel good movie directed by Sam Mendes or something.
Yeah, right. And then the number one would be this is the number one because it's me. This is the show. Dave Chappelle, Aziz Ansari, Zach Galifianakis, Seth MacFarlane, Kristen Shaw, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Nick Kroll, and Jason Mantzoukas. Boom! That's a good show. That's the show. You guys, you know what? Next time we play, bring your A game, okay? Let's all work together. You can't win on your own. No. Make up your mind, join it. Wow. There it is. This is the Carl Lewis song. I want to get to the bridge. Make a human change and never break it up. Break it up. Break it up. And it comes right back. We will never break it up. Break it up. And it's just in the video, just showing a bunch of track highlights and him working out. Oh, it's a perfect song. Transition to the Olympics tonight. The primetime Olympics in full swing. And a good news for fans of variety. Swimming is over, or at least limited. Tonight we went to track and field. We saw that. And I was making a joke. No beach volleyball. But now Beach volleyball is front and center. Molly Green's on the line with us. She's been fan jamming the Olympics all week long. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Good. Is Carl Lewis like the Florence Foster Jenkins of Olympians?
He may be. I hope there's a comeback. They should remaster that in Dolby. You know, give Carl a shot here because that's
release
a great
it on
song.
Vinyl, yeah. Like a 90 grand, like gram pink vinyl or something.
Yeah, exactly. Get to the record fairs. All right. So, what's the overall? What would you say is the overall tone and theme of tonight's Olympics?
Definitely more variety because we're starting to like overlap the transition into track and field. There's a little bit of swimming left. We're saying, you know, it's the long farewell to Michael Phelps began tonight because he still has one more relay event. But like last night I said I was getting some Phelps fatigue, but I felt a little emotional watching him swim tonight. And so he got the silver. He tied with his nemesis, Chad Leclos, who they seemed to get along fine tonight. And then a guy from Hungary who's been trying to medal in this event or win this event for a million years. And so they were all they all tied for silver. So they were all on the silver podium together holding hands.
That's so Olympic.
Sweet.
You know, it is nice because isn't it we've seen some bad sportsmanship in the last day, today and yesterday. The viral sensation of the Egyptian player not shaking the Israeli's hand in karate or whatever it was. And also Hope Solo.
Right.
You know, goalie for the U.S. women's team calling the Swedish team, cowards?
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't kick the ball harder?
Yeah.
Something like that? All right. So
yeah,
tonight,
that was a nice moment.
Yeah, it was nice. Okay, so would you say that silver medal, was that the best moment of tonight?
No, it was not the best moment of tonight. The best moment of tonight, so last night Simone Manuel won, and I thought that was my favorite moment. Yeah. But tonight was my favorite moment so far. Anthony Irvin winning the gold in the 50 meter. So he's the guy I talked about last night. He's 35. And he has had an on and off swimming career for 16 years.
He's the guy who took some time off and now he's back.
Yeah.
Right?
You
talked about him last
night. The 50 meter is the one, it's like the power swimming. It's just one length of the pool.
Oh, man.
These are like the biggest guys, the fastest guys.
Right.
And, yeah, so for him to win, and then the favorite came in second, and then Nathan Adrian came in third for the bronze. So that was fun and exciting. And, but I don't know. The American swimmers are just so likable. It's really easy to root for them.
All right. So what was the best broadcast moment tonight? What was the moment that we're all going to be chattering about tomorrow?
Well, that we're going to be chattering about tomorrow. I feel like everything is going to be Phelps for a couple of days. And so my favorite they're showing Leslie Jones in the crowd at beach volleyball now.
not familiar, the Saturday Night Live cast member has shown tremendous exuberance in supporting the team from all the athletes. And NBC was so into it, and the Olympics were so into it, that they sent her to Brazil. They sent her to Rio.
I'm hoping they send me next in for
right. That could be, you know, obviously. And so she is at the Olympics right now at the beach volleyball. They keep showing her yelling and screaming at the athletes.
Well, so a memorable broadcast moment was when they showed a photo of the guy from Singapore who won the gold in the event that Phelps won silver in. They showed a photo of him with Michael Phelps from, I believe it was 2000, now maybe like 2008, and this guy was a little kid, and Michael Phelps was looks like Michael Phelps now. So
that was a good same, right?
moment, a changing of the guard.
What was the funniest or most absurd thing that happened to
you? There's a couple that you'll be seeing a lot of them. It's Ashton Eaton and Bree Tyson Eaton. She's Canadian and he's American. He's the reigning gold medalist in the decathlon, and she's competing in the heptathlon.
Okay.
And while she's competing, he's watching, and he has a Canadian hat on. They keep making a big deal about the Canadian hat, but she's done just kind of okay. Like she's in sixth right now, and he looks they just keep showing him looking super frustrated and disappointed in her. But she has tan lines they're wearing like kind of like brief bottoms and like a sports bra, but she has like shorts, tan, like really distinctive shorts, tan lines, where it's white and then super tan for the rest of her legs. No one else has that but the Canadian.
That's always good.
So the two of them, they're cute. They're in like Visa commercials. But yeah, her tan lines, his cat, and disappointment.
Oh, that's
been
nice.
Highlights tonight.
All right. So tonight, what are some tidbits? So it was good to see the track and field start.
Yeah. And I was excited because I went to art school, so I don't have like a college sports team to root for. So the sports team I root for, both of my parents went to Texas Tech.
Okay.
And there's a track. A guy who's running the 400 meters, Gil Roberts, and he made it into the past his heat into the semifinal. So he's he was a track star at Tech, and has kind of had trouble. He was supposed to be kind of the next big thing a few years ago, and has had trouble like making that happen. So I'm rooting for him, and that like they're starting to. Now that we're transitioning into track and field, they're doing some more like profiles of the athletes, mm-hmm. a little bit more than I've seen them
that's
do.
All right, that's good. We're looking for that, right?
Yeah. Not any really like long stories, but you know, they'll tell someone's story, show kind of their background and their hometown and their family kind of thing.
How is the American team? I haven't paid attention. Do the Americans have a shot in track and field, like in actual sprinting and things? Are they good? Or is it is it Jamaicans again? Is it Usain Bolt and that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're really pushing that as the big story. And there's definitely competition, but like we won a gold in women's shot put tonight.
Yeah. Start. All right.
That was kind of a big deal. There's a guy, LaShawn Merritt, who's supposed to be kind of like the next Michael Johnson, and in the 400 and 200 meter. So he's a big U.S. track star.
Okay.
It feels like kind of in every, and again, maybe this is just like the NBC bias, but it feels like in every event they're showing, we're favorites or have a chance.
All right.
In it, other than
it probably
like
is the NBC
some longer
bias.
Distance things.
Yeah. The stuff that we're not favorites in, like handball, they're not showing. Right? This is the way it is. That's the NBC. Now, my question, NBC obviously is the, they're the network for the American network. So if I'm in Europe or Canada, are they showing it on a different network? Is that the idea? So someone else has the rights so they can be all Canadian biased?
That's a good question. I'm not going to be doing this next week because I'm going on vacation. I'm going with my friend who's Canadian.
I don't want to hear this.
And it will be interesting to see because this has happened before. We've watched sporting events together, and I'm just have such like USA blinders on. I forget that other people, not everyone feels that way.
Right.
So we'll see where we find the coverage.
Are you going to Canada?
No, we're not going to Canada.
So
but I'm sure we'll watch the Olympics in the evening.
Sandy Marshall's here. He's getting ready for Character Flaws. Sandy, as a Canadian, do you watch – is there a different network that they show the Olympics on?
You know, if you get cable, you get NBC, so you watch it on NBC. If you don't, I think CBC shows it, the Canadian broadcaster.
So then they're going to show the stuff that's prominently Canadian. They're not going to necessarily show – the U.S. volleyball between Italians and U.S.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's from the Canadian lens for sure.
Mm. Interesting. They're missing out because, as you see, Molly, once again, the Italian team's got pants on.
Yeah, well, they were warming up. Our girls were warming up in pants, and they took them off for the match. I think we're just a little bit tougher.
We are beating them pretty good, sir.
Here's my question: why can't the athletes be with see their families?
And they're not
at all?
They're not allowed to?
No. And I was doing some research to try to find the answer to that because they always talk about how like Allie Raceman can like only briefly talk to her parents, and like Michael Phelps has only seen photos of his baby or like when they're in the stand.
Right.
Why are they sequestered? And so when I started doing research on it, I couldn't find the answer. I just kept coming across articles about families that have been displaced from their homes in Rio for the Olympics. And I was like, I've got to
change your Google search. Yeah. Yeah, that's maybe they do it out of focus. You know, these little babies and stuff. They're gonna take away a beach volleyball player's focus. And as the Americans, we don't want to see that. Focus. It's like straight out of an 80s like kickboxer movie. So maybe that's it. I mean, from my experience of watching 80s kickboxer movies, that's probably why.
Seems to always come back to that.
It does.
A lot of our answers are getting from those.
Molly Green's going to be on vacation next week, so she will not be fan jamming with us, and we will miss you. But thank you this week for
Thank you for letting me do it. I've enjoyed it.
It's great. You're giving us you're exhausted from watching it. I love it. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks, Justin. It's just a character flaw.
Special night here on The Download, a special edition of Character Flaws, where we celebrate sketch, improv, characters, performances from people in the Chicago area. Robin Scott's going to join us tonight. Also, Sandy Marshall, of course, who's in studio. Real quick programming notes. The Frying Pan, which is usually heard on Friday night here at 10 o'clock, taking a break this week. Steve Gadlin on a little bit of vacation to gear up for the upcoming months. So let's get right to it, shall we? Well, it's no secret that we're in the middle of the most controversial election, maybe of all time. Presidential hopeful Donald Trump recently coined the phrase blue-collar billionaire as if to garner populist support for the fact that he's both a billionaire and not really blue-collar. But that rifled a member of the Download's community and a friend of the show, our good friend and well-known co-founder of Dinner Bansky & Ross, the world's largest tax audit and accounting firm with nearly a million employees around the world. Ted's in town to, as he puts it, to touch base with Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And he was nice to swing by the studio tonight. Ted Dinner Bansky, welcome to the Download.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Great to be here. You know, at the time it took you to do that intro, I bought a country in South America. Went with Paraguay. It's fun to say, isn't it? Paraguay. Say it. Paraguay.
Paraguay.
Wow.
Congratulations, I guess.
We'll see.
I mean, usually call in. To be honest, I really never thought you'd actually come into studio. So welcome to Chicago.
Yeah, you know, traveling's always tough. I don't know, you know, if you know, but I never use cash. I don't really have a need for it.
Really?
You know? You guys still use ones and fives and whatnot?
Yeah, it's same simple premise.
I'll make a note of that.
What brings you to town?
You know, I read a book on leadership, and it talked about how you have to be more accessible to your employees, you know, and going beyond just seeing their name on payroll. So I set up quarterly one-on-ones with some key world leaders, and Rahm made the cut. And I wanted to regroup on the city's parking meter contract.
Wait, so what do you mean? What's that about?
I just want to touch base and see how it's going. You know, I feel like if Rahm takes a closer look at the contract, it might be a couple tweaks, and he can boost some margins going into Q4. So
Not the most popular. Tell us about your beef with Donald Trump. That's why you're here.
Sure. It's one of the reasons I'm here. It's not really a beef. It's more the fact that, you know, he ripped off my moniker. You know, Jack Welch and I had a Trading Places bet on whether Donald Trump would or wouldn't win the presidency if he tweaked Viacom a little bit. And I said, you know, I'm the first blue-collar trillionaire, you know, and I think I heard about it and he kind of lifted it. And, you know, if I was younger, you know, 80, I'd be mad, you know, but I'm, you know, 85 and I'm all about abundance and, you know, enough for everybody. You ever go to Russia?
I have not. No.
A lot of money in Russia. A lot of money.
All right. Okay. Well, switching gears, I have to ask you with the recent developments in privatized space travel, the Richard Bransons and the Elon Musks of the world, they're building their own rockets to go to space. I hear you're getting into that game as well.
Yeah, you know, funny you should ask. You know, a lot of people ask me, you know, Elon Musk has his rocket. Richard Branson has his rocket. Where's yours? So I bought Jupiter. It's cheaper than you'd think.
The planet,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I bought it.
Okay, well.
Got a big red eye. It's my eye.
What are you going to do with it?
Well, I'm going to own it, aren't I? I'm going to own all the moons and who knows? I'll figure that out later. But, you know, you acquire these things and you figure out what to do with them.
Oh, well,
like those Fabergé eggs.
I didn't know they were. Yeah.
It's a bigger egg.
It's much bigger. Okay. I know it's late, so I'll let you go, but what's next for the world's richest man tonight?
Well, you know, I'm going to go to Wrigley Field. The other day I went to a baseball game and I sat in the regular seats for the first time.
Oh, nice.
I wanted to know what it's like for the underprivileged. And you know those beer guys? I like those guys. They have a fighting spirit. I made a note to bring them on board if I ever start a war. I like them. Anyway, I'm thinking of buying Wrigley Field and giving it to my business partner Skip's granddaughter.
His granddaughter?
Yeah, you know, all of our companies are owned by kids, you know, our kids. You know, the only things I actually own are my clothes, this Cartier watch from Jack Welch, and the housekeeping staff. Oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. I meant to say I love NAFTA.
Oh, there it is. Ted Dinnerbansky, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. Ted Dinnerbansky, co-founder and CEO of Dinnerbansky & Ross, with the new business book slated out for the fall entitled You Should Have Been Born Better and Other Secrets to Getting Rich Fast. Thanks, Susan. It's the download here on WGN. We're doing character flaws, of course. Nice little segment where we have some fun with improv, sketch comedy, characters, performances from some of Chicago's best. I have to say, one of my favorite time of the year is when the Blackhawks are on. That's awesome. I love the Blackhawks, and I love that we have our own download contributor. You know, Cochran and some of the other shows, they get real. You know, sort of, you know, the Eddie Olchicks, the Jeremy Roenicks, the big time, you know, the Judd Surratts, you know, and we want in on that too, because we feel like, but we're always opposite the game, and when we're on there, it's a day off, so they don't want to do anything. So we want to get our own, and we've been very fortunate to have on the download in the last year our download hockey contributor, Javi Havavola. Javi is a former Chicago Blackhawk who played on the team in the late 90s, and he also, early 2000s, maybe. He played in the New York Rangers system for a little bit, minor league. He was on the, he loves this time of year because of the Olympics, you know, he was on the Estonia-Latvia team when for hockey. Javi Havavola, we kind of took him off the beat because he needed to work on his analysis. His analysis wasn't as strong as it has been in the past. The download doesn't have a great budget. We don't have a lot of money. But the money that we do have, we gave to Javi for media training this offseason. And we wanted to check in with him before we get to the season to see how that training is going. So Javi Havavola is in studio with us tonight. Javi, good to see you.
Hello, Justin. Great to be back. Thank you for having me back on the download.
All right, great. Tell me, I mean, you know, you're in the middle of the offseason. Tell us a little bit about what the Blackhawks have done this offseason, what we can expect from them.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. You know, even though there was no late spring hockey for the Chicago Blackhawks this year, the 2016-17 season remains a white canvas upon which players like Toews and Seabrooks will paint a career masterpiece. And while the Blackhawks will be contending for another title this season with many talented core players signed onto long-term deals, to quote Boys to Men, it was so hard to say goodbye to salary-focused deserters like Ladd, Dale Weiss, and Thomas Fleischmann. And you know, I like Fleischmann, and let me say he didn't need the money. He didn't need the money.
Oh, Fleischmann. All right, that's good. That's good. Nice little Boys to Men reference in there. I like that. Okay, so what can we expect? I mean, as you know, the team didn't go far in the playoffs. They got bounced in the first round, but do you think that they come back stronger this year?
Well, I mean, no matter who stays or goes, much like an off-year update to the Apple iPhone, the Hawks will continue to have a similar look and feel in the upcoming season. Patrick Kane's coming off his first career scoring title. Toews continues to lead the AHL's most potent attacks, and loyalists like Seabrook and Samuelsson anchor the league's best defense. You know, just last week, I was having a ribeye with newcomer Erik Gustafsson, and he said, Javi, let me get through Labor Day, and then I'll sharpen the skates.
That's great. That was great. That was very insightful. Very good, Javi.
Thank you. I want to thank you for the training opportunity.
Yeah, you seem to be on script. I mean, it's Nicholas Chalmerson.
Chalmerson. I will make a note of that. We didn't get to the names yet.
Okay. Okay, so good. I'm glad. I mean, obviously, the Blackhawks need to figure out a way to counter the St. Louis Blues. The St. Louis Blues, of course, in their division, not to mention Minnesota, and Dallas, another. I mean, these teams are going to be tough next year. Nashville has boned up. All of the teams that are the current rivals for the Hawks are not getting worse. They're getting better. How do the Blackhawks deal with the fact that they've lost key players, deal with the fact that it's not just handed to them like it has been in the past? What do the Blackhawks have to do, Javi, to make sure that they're paying attention to the rivals in their division?
modern game of hockey originated in Canada in the 1880s, and the first modern indoor hockey game was played in Montreal in 1875. By the 1890s, it had become extremely popular and spread to the United States.
All right. Well, that's just a history lesson on hockey. I'm more interested in what specifically about the Blackhawks. I mean, what are they going to do? Marian Hossa's getting up there in age. Do they have a sort of succession plan?
Oh, okay, succession plan. Okay. The NHL long regarded itself as the world's elite, but the overwhelming superiority of the Soviet Union in international amateur play in the 60s led to a dramatic 1972 summit series between Team Canada.
Okay, it just seems like you're regressing a little bit, reading from Wikipedia page about hockey. I can see the notes, but I feel like, that's what the media training was for, to get us out of just reading random stuff off of Wikipedia.
It doesn't matter if you've bought a newly built home, condo in the maintained community, fix it up the DIY squad at Home
No,
Depot.
That's an ad. That's an ad on the side of the page.
To answer the phone.
Javi, I need you to dig deep on this one. What do you think the Blackhawks, remember eye contact, what do you think the Blackhawks need to do to bring home another Stanley Cup? Eye contact. From the heart.
Marathon running is an enjoyable sport for many people from all walks of life who devote their entire day to train all year round in all types of weather.
All right,
the folks at Fleet Feet are.
There you go. We're fading them out. Javi Havavola. He'll get it together before the season starts. It's just a character flaw. Character Flaws here on 720 WGN, the download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this is a big week for me, Pete. This weekend I've got the neighborhood block party, which I'm excited about, but I just moved to the neighborhood, so I really don't know what to bring to these things. Like, I want to do something tapioca-based, but I feel like that might be too much. You know what? I think it might be time for us to bring in the download's block party queen. She's a cookout queen. She's written a ton of stuff on this. You can find her recipes everywhere. Darby Mellencamp. Darby Mellencamp, come on in.
Oh, yes. Hello. Okay. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being here.
Justin, thank you for having me.
All right. So I have a dilemma. I have a big dilemma. I don't know what to bring to the neighborhood cookout.
I want you to feel confident when you get there, Justin, because your food is an expression of who you are. You know, like what you choose and what you cook and whatnot. And I'm a big fan of all things miniature. I just think that's fun.
Miniature, huh? Yeah,
just tiny things. Like, I have min pins because they look like pinchers, but they're so tiny and small. So anyway, I used to love to bake casseroles, but they're so big. And it takes so much time and they're heavy. So I started making mini, mini dishes.
Mini.
The first mini is M-A-N-Y,
a
lot of
many,
them.
Many. Okay,
but
got
because
it.
They're so small, I call them mini dishes. Yeah,
right.
So I would say you should absolutely roll up with a big old tray full of mini, mini dishes. And I would bake them for you, absolutely. Or I could give you recipes and you could try it yourself.
Well, wouldn't it just be smarter to, put some baked beans in a pot and then just make a lot of baked beans and just bring the baked beans?
No, I try to stay so positive, Justin, and I'm not going to try and throw any shade on beans. I like beans. I put beans in some of my many, many dishes. But to just show up with just a bowl of beans, people won't think, well, that's nice. It's nice starch. You get your carbs and everything. But, oh, boy, that's messy. Yeah. You try to put that on a plate.
Okay. All right.
You
All
see
right.
what that does to a sloppy Joe bun.
Yeah, I was thinking should I just bring a substantial amount of one dish as opposed to many, many dishes? I feel like... Maybe because of my novice level, maybe I just bring a bunch of corn.
Oh.
No corn?
I like corn. Corn is in one of my dishes. Okay, so you know who I am. I'm Darby Mellencamp. Mm-hmm. Okay, no relation to John Cougar. But one of my dishes, and I'm going to see if you can figure out what the name of it is by the ingredients, okay? Because I gave you a hint. Mellencamp. Okay. So one of my dishes has corn in it. It's got rhubarb. Think about what these words start with, okay? Rhubarb, onions, corn, and kale.
All right.
And what do you think the name of that mini dish
well,
is?
Well, it's just R-O-C-K.
In the USA. And I put it in a tiny dish that is red, white, and blue.
Wow.
And you could bring that. If you want to bring corn, then you bring R-O-C-K in the USA mini dish.
How mini? M-I-N-I. How many are we talking about? How small are these?
Oh, they are so tiny. They're bite-sized. You know, like those little bite-sized quiches? I think those are cute because a quiche is nice, but so big.
It just seems, I don't know, Darby, it just seems like that might be attracting too much attention to myself. Maybe I just go in, you know, like I just want to blend in with the crowd. I don't want to make such an announcement with my mini dishes.
Oh, you know what? I want the opposite for you, Justin. I think you should draw attention to yourself because you're special.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
There's an affirmation. You should rub it in.
Yeah. No, I thank you for that.
Yeah.
And I throw it right back to you. You're special too, Darby.
I didn't give you that affirmation to get one back in return.
Well, you did.
But it worked.
It worked.
No, I'll take it.
I'm just saying as a normal, you know, block party cookout,
yeah.
Should I, you know, maybe uncooked hot dogs. Something that just seems like our buns or it just seems like the mini thing might just be too mini.
Well, then don't bring so many. Just bring one mini dish for each person. They'll pop one, and you know what? They're going to want more.
Yeah.
And if you don't want attention brought to yourself, then you shouldn't have done that. Because then everybody's going to have their arms crossed. That's what I'm doing right now. They're going to stare at you like, why didn't you bring more of these mini dishes?
Right, well, that's...
And you said, well, I had the option to bring many, and they think that's funny. They would.
All right.
Just like you did. You're laughing.
I do think that's... The alliteration is great.
Darby's many dishes, tiny and delicious. Only thing not tiny is the taste. Fills you up till it hurts so good. Do you get it? Because that's his Mellencamp song.
No, I got it. It was you've been doing that throughout. That's R-O-C-K, hurts so good.
Do you want to know what I live in?
Jack and Diane?
No, my men pins are named Jack and Diane. And sometimes when they do their J-O-Bs inside, I say there's a little pity by Jack and Diane.
Right.
But I live in a little pink house.
Pink house, right.
I can't stop.
Right. I've run out of John Cougar Mellencamp songs that I remember, so that's pretty much.
I haven't.
Darby Mellencamp,
mm-hmm.
Thank you, I guess. I'm not really sure that I got to the bottom of what I need to do for this block party. But
I think you did. You know what it is? I think I'm going to bring over a whole bunch of mini dishes or many, okay? Mm-hmm. And you're going to bring them, and then you're going to be the hit of the party.
Okay, well, that sounds great. You can get Darby's stuff online, a recipe book. She's also got her new book out. What's the name of it?
Too Much is Not Enough.
Right. Darby Mellencamp, the Downloads Cookout Queen, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
Darby Mellencamp here in Character Flaws, played by Robin Scott. Great comedian here in Chicago, Second City, all over the place. You can see their annoyance and everywhere. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up Character Flaws.
It's just a character flaw.
His Character Flaw here on a Friday night, filling in for Steve Gadlin in the frying pan. Character Flaws, of course, sketch, improv, characters, and of course, performances from Chicago's best. You know, I always say Chicago's best, and it could be the world's best. And I did promise improv tonight, and I haven't given it to you yet. So, you know, this is great because this is a treat to have such an international flavor in studio from the Australian improv group Juxtaposition. Rory McShane is in studio to do some international improv in for the International Improv Festival here in Chicago. Rory McShane, thanks for being here.
Justin Coffin on the Download is ready for some comedy, huh? Yeah, great to be here. Really great to be in the Windy City. Sure is windy outside,
yeah,
eh?
That's not why they call it the Windy City. But the so let's get you're going to do some improv. I thought the whole group would be in. Are they coming in or is it a...
But hanging out with the guys in Parliament just down the street, no big deal. I was able to swing on over. So it's me, Rory McShane, head of Juxtaposition, Australia's number one improv group. Are you ready to go?
So it's just you.
It's just me. So fasten your seatbelt and get ready for a wild ride.
All right, then. All right, sure. Okay, and here's some improv from Juxtaposition.
Great. So what we do at Juxtaposition, we are Australia's number one improv comedy troupe. We just need two things. We just need a regular location and a crazy animal from the zoo. So the first round, could I get like a regular location, like a Dunkin' Donuts or a Starbucks?
All right. Well, how about, I would say, how about a coffee shop?
A coffee shop. What a great regular location. That's great. And can I get a crazy animal from the zoo?
Giraffe.
A giraffe, great. Let's take a giraffe in a coffee shop. What would that look like? Hello, I'm a giraffe, and I'd like some coffee. And scene. Wow, I'm about to watch some more comedy. Oh, that was great.
So that's it. That's
what we did. We set up the juxtaposition, and off we go. Let's do another one, round two. Let's get a little more topical for the Olympic spirit, right? Let's get a regular Olympic game,
Pete,
and a crazy animal from the zoo.
All right, Pete, you got Olympic sport?
I will go with swimming.
Swimming.
Swimming, that's a great regular Olympic sport. Michael Phelps, wired for success, 22 gold medals. Now let's get a crazy animal from the zoo.
How about a aardvark?
An aardvark. Well, that's great. That's good. What if we saw a scene with Michael Phelps and an aardvark? Let's see what that would look like. Hi, I'm Michael Phelps. Hi, I'm an aardvark. And scene. That's all we got for that one.
That's
what
it. That's
a great one.
That's not even juxtaposition. That's just, you're just saying the things that were thrown out, and then you just say it, and then you say scene.
It was a juxtaposed encounter where one regular guy encountered a really weird animal from the zoo.
All right.
Let's do one more. Let's get a regular, everyday, sexually transmitted disease. It's a garden variety out of the farmer's almanac. Just a regular, sexually transmitted disease.
All right. I guess herpes.
Herpes, that's a great regular sexually transmitted disease. And now can I get like a crazy animal from the zoo?
No. I guess to do an elephant.
An elephant? Wow, that's a great... Well, who knows what that's going to look like? Let's juxtapose the real normal sexually transmitted disease herpes with a really red, crazy animal from the zoo, an elephant. Hi, I'm an elephant. No, I've got herpes. And see, we are Juxtaposition. We're playing on Friday nights at 10 p.m. Come see us. Thanks for having us, Justin Poole in the booth. Thanks for having us back.
Thanks. Rory McShane from the improv group Juxtaposition, the one-man Australian improv group, really giving us at least to see how they do it on the other side of the globe. All right. Well, there you go. That was Character Flaws. Sandy Marshall, good job, buddy. That was some good stuff. Did you see Rory McShane just left?
I did. He just took off. Did
it's crazy.
That
I didn't.
Was crazy. I thought they'd have some more people, though. Was it just him?
It was just him, yeah. I thought it was, you know, I thought when I saw the press release, it would be Australian improv. It'd be like nine guys, but I guess it's just one.
He's out in the lobby, like, taking suggestions for, like, regular buildings or something like that, and he like juxtaposes. But yeah, great to see you guys. Great
to see you too, man. Thanks for coming and playing tonight. You had a good SNL draft. Also, good to see Javi Havavola and of course Ted Dinnerbansky in the 1% Report, the Blue Collar Billionaire.
They were back. Can I add one more to the SNL draft?
Yeah,
Dabney Coleman.
Is he alive?
I don't know.
Dabney Coleman.
I'm going over any rules, and I'm just adding Dabney Coleman.
Dabney Coleman. All right. That's true. That is kind of great that right at the end, we get to add one more person off the top of our head. Who would you pick? I will pick Ken Marino from the State.
Lou Rawls. Is he dead?
He's dead. He died like maybe 10 years ago. So you're going to go with a musician? That just came to the top of your head? What about like a Kanye West? That could be good. Maybe a Rihanna.
No. Lou Rawls.
You're just going to go with it?
Lou Rawls.
All right. That's going to do it for the download tonight. Coming up, we've got a great week next week. We're back in the saddle on Monday night. I'm looking forward to Carm and Esmeralda. Leon are going to be the hosts, filling in for Patty Vasquez next here on 720 WGN. All right, that's going to do it tonight. Next week, a good show. I'm excited, man. We've got Travis Knight, the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, is going to join us at the big table next week. We got a lot of great people coming through. I'm excited. But that's next week. This week, tonight, right now, 11 o'clock, Mark Carmen, Esmeralda Leon, in for Patty Vasquez. Good to see you, Mark. How are you?
A lot of pressure, Justin, on a Friday night sitting in for Patty. I feel like that's the pinnacle show of the week.
There's
always a party going on in here, just a great vibe, sending people into their weekend. I don't know if I'm up for it. I'm a little nervous.
Do you turn around and do the beat tomorrow?
I do. It's been a busy week. I've been enjoying myself. I got to do a couple overnights. Now I get to sit in with Patty and be with Esmeralda, huh?
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's what I'm talking about. So, yeah, no, we had a jam-packed three-hour extravaganza for
you.
Well, we're just going to torch Hope Solo for 3 hours.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking about doing.
That's unbelievable.
What's wrong with her?
Well, I mean,
how is that possible?
It just seems like there's a spirit of competition that you're supposed to avoid that stuff in the Olympics.
Right?
I mean, that's the idea. Like, the guy who didn't shake hands with the Israeli. The whole point of the Olympics is that you put all that stuff aside.
Right. It's called you're staying in the Olympic Village. It's people coming together. There is an Olympic spirit. And by the way, you're also representing your country as well. There's that in there. And your teammates and everything about it. And by the way, you have a laundry list of issues that have been swept under the rug for you to be on the team.
Right.
You should be on the best behavior of anyone. Hope Solo.
Keep your mouth
shut. They should learn from us.
Yeah, they should.
Do you see us?
Yeah.
Getting together?
We get together. Yeah, I was surprised to see her say that, but yeah.
Yeah, right. People missed it, by the way, if they don't know what we're talking about, which is possible. She just said that Sweden, they called them cowards. They played cowardly. They kicked your ass is what they did. They beat you.
We'll talk about it, though, on our show.
We will talk about it on our show.
All right.
That and the Cubs are winning the World Series.
And the Cubs winning the World Series. Throw it in at the end.